With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply. With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast with Yahoo Sports Canada. This is actually, surprise, but the last episode of Raptors Over Everything, at least with Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm actually going to be leaving the company and pursuing another opportunity to be announced later. And wanted to obviously see through Summer League and, of course, the Olympics as well. That was very fun to cover. And to be honest, I was really thinking about for a while, like what to do with the last episode of the podcast, which this will be episode, I think, 431 in the span of 2.5 years, which were pretty great. So, you know, I was thinking about sort of how I was going to approach this, which person I was going to have on. You know, Blake was the first ever guest for this show. I had him in studio. It was real fancy. We talked about the Marc Gasol trade and how that was going to turn the Raptors into like the greatest defense of all time. Then I had Alex on. I think I was trying to get behind the scenes scoops on Jeremy Lin feeding Serge Ibaka stinky tofu. I don't know if you remember that. I was trying to get scoops out of Alex like he was Woj or something.
Yeah, I gave you too many scoops that I got booted off the show. So you're welcome. Yeah.
Oh, that was also it was funny you mentioned that because shortly thereafter, you showed me because you were the producer for How Hungry Are You and some of the most iconic episodes, but you had shown me a snippet of what I think what Kyle was going to eat or what Kawhi was going to eat, something like that, but you gave me the actual scoop. And then I was in Serge's house talking to Serge and I accidentally mentioned to him that I already knew what was happening, and then he pressed me and I was like, you know what, this is Serge Ibaka, I'm literally in his house, if he's going to press me for information, I'm just going to have to give it up. I was not a good...
Was this before or after he choked Marquese Chriss? Because I think that's actually important timeline-wise of how shook you were.
Will, this is why you weren't invited to the heist Alex is doing after this pod, because you're too easy to press for information.
No, for some reason, Alex is dressed in all black with a black toque as well, man. What do you have planned for tonight? Let's be real.
Forehead jokes really got to me. You know, I made big head jokes about you for 8 years, and I couldn't handle 3 days of jokes. And so in the middle of a heat warning in August, mm-hmm. You got me wearing a toque right now, trying to hide my forehead, you know?
Yeah. Damn, that's really wild. So, yeah, I mean, so I guess going back to what I was trying to say before, it's just like for this episode, I really just wanted to bring on the people I have on all the time. And so obviously you guys are core fixtures of what this program was and everything like that. And I'll be bringing on more guests. It'll be a bit of a long episode. It's all good. But let's actually start with basketball and stuff, Summer League. Blake, you were down in Vegas enjoying the sights and scenes. I mean, first of all, let's start here. Like, how different was this year's Vegas as compared to previous ones in the past?
Yeah, it was definitely different. It was weird. You know, that's the most socialization and the most crowd that I've had in forever. From a, like, the basketball environment standpoint, it wasn't crazy different. Mask usage was maybe a little better than I expected. And as media, you had to be vaccinated to go. So I at least knew, like, the people that I was sitting with and stuff were vaccinated. Mm-hmm. But access was more restricted. Like, you couldn't really... Other than a quick convo with Fred, like, you can't really go and, like, talk to people quite as freely as usual. And then obviously, like, the Vegas aspect of it, Vegas is pretty much back to normal. And other than a hit and run at the roulette table, I didn't spend too much time on the casino floor this year. But it was, it was cool. It was really nice to have live basketball back.
No, you got to back that up. I'm not actually a gambling degenerate outside of our Poker Stars games. What's a hit and run?
So it's just like I rolled up to the roulette table with all the cash I had left at the end of my trip and put it all on one spin and won and left.
Actually?
Yeah.
Yo, okay, all right.
Yeah, I bet my new nephew's birthday. And
wow.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on multiple fronts. No, that's cool, man. Yeah. Who all was down there for the Raptors? I think we saw like pretty much everybody.
The entire roster except Goran Dragic was there at some point or another. So, you know, as far down as like Sam Dekker and Isak Bonga were there, Fred Pascal, Boucher, Gary Trent, all those guys. Everyone was there except Dragic at some point or another.
Nice. Alex, obviously you have been in depth watching these games, breaking them down. I see you tweeting about the game, which half of the tweets are just recycled memes and the other half are just responding to my tweets, quote retweeting or just directly responding from the Yahoo account.
All right, stop exposing my Yahoo Sports Canada formula. All right, what are we doing here?
Oh man,
you're just gonna leave a trail of blood on the way out? What's going on, man?
No, not necessarily, but no, I think I might have more podcast episodes than you have tweets for Yahoo, but but anyway, let's start here with Summer League. Okay, so we got four games through it now. There's one more game coming up for the Raptors. You know, we'll see who plays. Hopefully everyone plays. But we've had a good sense of all these guys. I wanted to get your thoughts, first impressions on Scottie Barnes. Is he living up to the hype for you? Is it sort of what you've expected? Anything sort of catch your eye with Scottie Barnes?
Yeah, you know, I think Summer League is just all about, like, setting expectations going into the season, right? And I think especially for the rookie guys like a Scottie Barnes, you know, if you look at what like Kate Cunningham has been doing, like Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, like you just didn't want Scottie to come out here and look like a dud. I mean, if he did, it's fine. I'm sure we would find excuses. You know, he's a work in progress and all that. But I mean, you look at the way that he played in the second half against what's the ball brother's name? I'm forgetting his name now.
Jello.
The guy on the Hornets. Yeah, Jello.
Jello
King
ball.
Of Vegas. Yeah, Jello ball, which sounds like an item at a Chinese bakery. But you saw the way he played in the second half, and it's like, you know, we're gonna ignore that air ball jumper that he had with like 2 minutes left. But like, sure, yeah. No, like Scottie looks great on the defensive end, and I feel like just like from sheer just athleticism and just like his activity on the floor, he's gonna create a lot of stuff on the offensive end, and he's not like a black hole there. Like you can see there is some playmaking skills that I think will come out as he gets more comfortable with teammates. And just like I said when I did my 5 second deep dive on our last run at back, like he just looks huge on the floor.
Yeah, he looks ridiculous.
It honestly, I feel like that makes a difference. Like he looks like he has a Dwight Howard body already, which is like freakish. And so I think honestly early returns on Scottie, and I'm sure you guys are going to talk about the other players as well, even like Precious Achiuwa, you know, and some of these other guys, even Delano Banton. Like, honestly, I think the Summer League's been a huge win for the Raptors in terms of getting fans excited about whatever this next era is going to be.
Yeah, Blake, is with Scottie, I remember even before the draft, literally right before the draft, I brought you on. We did like a Scottie versus Suggs debate. I just kept saying, I was taking the position of pro Scottie, you were taking pro Suggs. And I think all I said for Scottie over and over again was his measurements. I just kept reading you his draft combine numbers and it's like his shuttle run. But I mean, what are your takeaways so far after seeing him up close? I'm not sure how much access you've gotten to him as well, but just, you know, your thoughts on Scottie as well.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, like the vibes are immaculate. He is a tremendous, like even in person, there's like this gravitational force of positivity around him. And like, you see the way other guys interact with him and like every coach and player is raving about how cool he is to be around and stuff. On the court. Yeah. I'm not too worried about, you know, some of the numbers. Like he hasn't been very efficient scoring, but nobody has been. Like Jalen Suggs has a 51 true shooting percentage. Kuminga sub 50. You know, Moses Moody struggled a little bit. A lot of Evan Mobley has a true shooting percentage of like 37%, but like outside of the ball going in has looked every bit like a number three pick. So don't get too hung up on the numbers. I think the things that stand out to me about Barnes, the playmaking in transition is really real. He has good outlet passes, smart hit ahead passes, a really good sense of space and, you know, where players are going, where the ball needs to go, where he needs to go. That's not all the way there yet in the half court. I think there's a little bit of like his skill level can't keep up with the level of his physicality and like what his brain wants to do. So he's seeing these opportunities, but then you're sometimes seeing misses at the rim or, you know, turnovers on dump offs because there's just that little bit of misalignment between skill and desire. And I think that's exactly the kind of mistake you want to have a guy making at this point, because you can teach the skill level up. You can't really, it's harder to teach the feel up. And then two, he's made just like a couple of really degree of difficulty baskets. And it's like, Will, you posted a screenshot of that one. Like he starts outside the elbow and takes like two big strides. It covers like 10 feet of ground for a baseline fadeaway. It's like,
what do you do against that, man?
Yeah. And it's like, no, he probably shouldn't be shooting those at this point in the NBA, but that is a difficult shot for a young guy to have in his bag. And I think it signals good things about, you know, where the development's going to come and what the potential is on that end. And then, I mean, defensively, he's going to be a stud there, I think.
Yeah, defensively, that's the thing that I don't think anyone had any concerns about. You knew right away that he, even just watching some of the college stuff, like, I mean, I it's one thing to be a good defender at college, but he was like sunning people in college. I don't know what else to say. It was just like nobody could ISO this guy. At that kind of skill level, to be honest, I didn't really feel like anybody was ISOing him even at the summer league skill level, which is still
Kuminga like got him down a couple times on baseline drives, but it's also like, you know, you're figuring out where help comes from in the NBA and how to angle guys, and Kuminga was a lottery pick, like offense is gonna win sometimes.
I think to Alex's point about the like, he just looks so much bigger. I think there does kind of afford like a margin of error for him. He's missed a couple of like short layups, right? There's one play, I think, in the Warriors game where he missed three straight layups in a row. Or maybe this was the Houston game, but he missed like three straight layups in a row, but he kept getting the offensive rebound and kept going back up for it. And then there was another play in the game against Charlotte yesterday where he drove inside, got in for the layup, kind of took two defenders with him because he was so strong that he beat his own man. Then the help came. He kind of bumped both guys to get to the position, missed the layup, but then was the first one there to jump back up for the putback dunk. And he like yelled at the guys. I'm just like, damn, you just got to be really strong to do that. Like that's where, if you have this like immense physical advantage, which I think in the summer league setting, especially defensively, had an immense defensive advantage, but I think even offensively, like that's something that you can use. And it was interesting hearing Patrick Mutombo explain sort of like, you know, he's so versatile. We're really trying to figure out essentially where we can use him. And they kind of used him in a variety of spots in that Charlotte game. And that was very intriguing to me. You know, I think Precious has probably been the second most impressive guy at Summer League. So Alex, I'll go to you. Precious Achiuwa, your thoughts. What are your thoughts on the finger guns, man? Are you enjoying this? He might be the first guy since Joakim Noah to do that.
Yeah. Reminded me a lot of Sean Kemp. I don't even think you were born yet during the Sean Kemp era, you know? Precious is great. You know, I'd be interested to see what his role is going to be with the team. Again, like sheer athleticism. And, you know, it's funny. We're talking about Precious. I've been thinking a lot about Freddie Gillespie as well. Just, you know, huge struggles at Summer League. Is he going to make the team?
You can't just make this man sing Party in the USA, get a whole bunch of engagement, and then let him go, man. Come on. That's like a CBA violation. Come on. The players union has to file something, man. You can't just use this man for retweets.
I'm also worried about our guy Utah Watanabe too, man.
No, come on. He's fine. Maybe.
Yeah. Gillespie looking way better in 20 NBA games and looking like the worst player on the floor in four Summer League games is some bizarre environmental stuff or in his own head kind of stuff. He's missed some bad ones.
We're all rooting for him, right? Like we're all rooting for 100%. Freddie, especially the members of the media. Like he is so media friendly, not friendly, just like interesting. Like he's open. He's very smart, but he's also just like, we saw like every time he was in front of a microphone or in front of a camera last year, he was doing the cat buggy.
The Raptors generally get good guys, except for a Sam Decker here and there. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Well, speaking of Sam Decker, no, kid. I don't know, man. Like, you did talk to Sam and stuff. I don't want to step on your article and stuff, but
yeah.
How was that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say I had a pretty lengthy conversation with him, and in doing some reporting around that, I'm a little more understanding of the situation and the Raptors' decision than I was before. If we're being completely real, it's a $300,000 camp guarantee or whatever it is. Like, it's no sweat to cut this guy if he comes in and isn't a culture fit or whatever. I certainly understand that on the back of the Terrence Davis stuff and, you know, in contrast to how the Raptors have been at the forefront of social change, like, it certainly looks a certain way. But I hope that the conversations that I've had are a better indication of where he's at now. So we'll see, but I'll have a story coming on that at some point.
All right. Wow. Really just try to step on Blake's story right before it happened. Well, okay, so Precious Achiuwa, though. I mean, you didn't, I get it. Yeah, I mean, Freddie Gillespie, I don't think Summer League's going to tangibly. It's not like he's not going to come into training camp and not get a chance to, like, really compete over that week or, you know, two in terms of Summer League and preseason and then sort of, either cement his spot or maybe not cement his spot. But I think Precious has looked better than I expected from him in the sense that I think he's very coordinated for a guy that big. And maybe not as much with the back to the basket game, because I don't think he has one. But when he's facing up, or even when he gets the ball in transition, he seems to really be able to handle himself. It's like Pascal, but with a little bit more power to it. You know, I don't want to overstate, I'm not saying he's better than Pascal or even like Pascal right now. That's not true. But in terms of that dexterity and that speed, that ability to play in transition as a big, that's got to excite you guys.
Yeah, the rip and run ability off of defensive rebounds is huge, right? And we've heard Nick Nurse talk about it, even trying to get Ken Birch to do it. Like, the more guys you can have that do that, the more you can attack advantages against scramble defenses and stuff. And even just like simpler stuff like DO action, like having the big be a threat to dribble out of that instead of, hey, if he doesn't hand it off, he's dead. I think that's huge. And I think Precious has some buy-in to do based on, you know, where you fit positionally. And you use the Pascal comparison. I think long-term it probably suits him to look at other examples of how centers have developed and maybe buy into being a smaller center, just kind of like the way the roster's constructed and where his strengths are right now. But I think he fits, right? Like, he's another 6'8", 6'9" guy. Switchy defensively. We saw in the game against USA and again in the Olympics with Nigeria, where like his tracking ability across multiple positions is really strong defensively. So there's some switchability there. He's probably, I don't have the measurements in front of me, I'd imagine he has the best standing reach of any of the Raptors. So when you're talking about potential rim protection and stuff like that, there's a guy there. I think there's definitely a backup center there, and you see, you know, hey, a summer or two summers in the Raptors development system, you know, can you get a starting level guy out of that? And I don't think it's completely unrealistic, but that's what Birch is there for, to help bring him along anyway.
Alex, give me your long-term thoughts, long-term potential thoughts on Precious Achiuwa. What's been exciting you the most? I mean, to be honest, I think maybe just the contrast with last season centers will probably excite you alone, but I think in the case of Freddie, I think he's probably teaching us a little bit, like, you know what? It's almost like the reverse of beer goggles with some of these guys.
Yeah, I like the chemistry that he's had with Malachi Flynn too. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it's just been a summer league thing, and I'm always not trying to overreact, but like, if you're thinking about next season, you would assume those are the two guys, you know, two of the guys that are going to anchor some sort of second unit in there. And I assume Scotty Barnes is going to start coming off the bench too, although I don't know. I guess it wouldn't surprise me whatever role they slot him into as the season goes on. But for me, it's just, I'm thinking about last year. Remember, Will, we'd always joke, like, how many guys off the bench, especially after they traded Norman Powell, could get to like 10 points.
Nah, six. We're just saying six.
Yeah, we were looking for six.
Two baskets points. Or three baskets. But
and you know, shows the guys like Paul Watson Jr. and like DeAndre Bembry and all these guys who, like, you know, contributed and played minutes, and Stanley Johnson as well. But there's a reason why none of those guys are with the team anymore, right? Like, I think they've turned the roster over pretty significantly, especially just from a depth standpoint. And they're bringing in these guys that I think have much better long-term potential. Like, you're not talking about any of those guys that I just mentioned. Like, you talk about like Stanley Johnson. Like, we were never talking about him as kind of a potential long-term piece on this team, you know, even though however much badly we might have wanted it the last 2 years. But I think that's what we have now, you know, with Precious and obviously Malachi. And, you know, I keep forgetting that Chris Boucher is on this team. I guess, like, we just don't talk about him that much right now.
Oh, but, did you see him on the broadcast? He basically had an outfit as conspicuous as yours, man. He had the bucket hat. He had a mask.
Does he have a Burberry? He's got, like, a Burberry sponsorship? Or I guess he's just spending his own money. Shouts to Chris Boucher. You know, I never want to make any jokes about him. Wow. I know that's your thing, Will. I think for me, it's just looking at Precious and looking at the rest of the guys too, maybe like bigger picture in terms of like the Raptors have in a way really addressed the one thing that was so glaring last year. It was just this whole lack of depth and like who are the players going to be after the starters. And when I think about integrating these guys in with guys like Fred, like OG and like Pascal, like, I don't know, like I'm pretty excited to watch this team next season.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the one guy we haven't talked about in depth yet is Malachi. And I don't know. I'm not totally sure how to make of his summer league performance, because I'm like, clearly he is like the most skilled player on the floor in a lot of these games. I think he's also, at the same time, he's trying to be a vet and a point guard and sort of being a steadying presence. But at the same time, he has stuff that he's worked on. This is also his first summer league. And he's also like, you know, I guess not a rookie. He's a sophomore now, but you know, he's still a relatively inexperienced guy. Blake, what did you make of Malachi's performances? Because, you know, at first I was like, I kind of expected him to come into these games, average like 8-9 assists, you know, hit a couple of open threes, like just be a good point guard. But it felt like a lot of the times he was trying to get his own shot. Do you read anything like that?
No, I mean, part of the reason his assists are low is like the whole team is shooting like 38% or something like that.
Yeah,
that's
fair. Yeah,
it's you know, it's a bad scene when Precious has the best hands on the team of the guys that Malachi's passing to. I think it's been good, and I think honestly, like his chemistry with Precious, as Alex mentioned, is pretty strong already, and you look at that as a good harbinger, and like, I'm okay with him in this environment looking for a shot a little bit more, because that's kind of what we were asking from him last year when he got those minutes, was like, hey, you need to be a little bit more aggressive sometimes. That second unit is going to need a guy who can, you know, make a bucket with the clock winding down, or, you know, hopefully the second unit's a little bit better this year, but potentially, you know, if it's the Raptors special of the Flynn, Barnes, Boucher, Achiuwa second unit is going to win like all their stretches 4-2. You know, you're going to need guys who can get a tough bucket. And I think, you know, Flynn still has a long way to go as a finisher. I think adding to like kind of his floater range package is probably the next thing for him, if he's not going to be able to get at the rim at an elite level, because he's more of a tempo change guy than a burst past your defender guy. And then the big thing is, I mean, he's hit a lot of threes in this tournament. He's I think he's 12 for 29. And I thought last year the mechanics looked good, even though he shot poorly. But if he has that as a weapon, you know, that opens up more possibility for him to play alongside Fred and kind of operate on the second side. Or it opens up opportunity for, hey, you know, if Precious is going to be as good a rim running threat as we think maybe he can develop into, and Malachi's got a little pull up juice to his game, you know, that's suddenly like a really good base for your second unit offense.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely more excited this. Like last season, it was like, I generally felt okay. I felt good about 4 out of the 5 starters. When they put Norm into the starting five, I didn't feel totally great about the defense because it was a little small. They couldn't rebound, but I felt okay with all 5 starters. I felt good about all 5 starters, but at no point did I feel good about any bench guy except for Chris. Chris was legitimately good off the bench last year. And I think he takes some stuff off the table, but he definitely brings a lot to the game. This year, I'm actually kind of excited to go to the second unit. That's one of the hallmarks of what the Raptors have been able to do all these years, right? Is to have that second unit and have it be exciting, have it be defense first, have them run. Mostly have Kyle Lowry also being the main guy empowering all these lineups. And I know Blake has written 10,000 words on all these individual lineups, including Bebe and Landry Fields and Terrence Ross and whoever. But they've kind of finally gotten back to that, because last year they just didn't have the talent, even if some of those guys popped, it was sort of like they weren't going to pop long term. We're all kind of like temporary bandage kind of situations. So, no, I mean, I'm excited. Alex, what about the rest of the guys? So we know those three guys are going to be on the team. We know Scotty, Precious, Malachi is going to be on the team. The rest of the guys, Delano, Ish, Wainwright, maybe Justin Champagny, like any of these other guys excite you?
I guess I would go with Delano. I'm guessing that's going to be a Raptors 905 thing next season, assuming the G League is back up full and running and all that stuff. But, you know, I mean, just story alone, you know, I think we, I don't know, shouldn't understate the fact that, you know, first Canadian drafted by the Raptors and be able to get this 2-year deal and the first year fully guaranteed, you know, I think it's great. And shouts to him. This, I've never seen a guy look more like a Toronto man's.
Is Delano, in addition to being the first Canadian drafted by the Raptors, is he the first Raptor who has definitely been in the YouTube comments of a Run It Back episode?
Yeah. Nah, Delano's so definitely in there, bro. Delano's
No. The next crop, when we start, I think it'll be like the 2026 draft is when we're going to see. There's like a 13-year-old out there right now in Markham that's definitely going to get drafted by the Raptors in 2026. But no, Delano's like the number one seed of Toronto man's. And no, it's a great, I just think it's a great story. I honestly think it's a great story. And you know, for what he showed at Summer League, you know, the Raptors are happy enough to give him that contract. And I really want to see what he does. Again, it goes back to, I think Blake was talking about it too, just like the development track that the Raptors put all these guys on. And it's exciting for them to bring so many of these guys into the system. Like even Precious. Precious was drafted ahead of Malachi Flynn, right?
Yeah,
like 20. In the 2020 draft.
Yeah.
So like they've got two guys from like the 2020 draft. You know, they've got Delano, obviously, David Johnson, aka 21 Savage. You know,
he got a British name too. Like it's really complete. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's he a sounds knife, like a man. Member it's, of Parliament. Anyway.
It's a knife. It's a knife through the defense.
It's another three. That's what we've seen from him so far.
Two things Raptors fans bullied people into. Number one, bullied Michael Grange into hitting up Goran Dragic for an apology.
Yeah,
and they bullied David Johnson into doing a We the North video. So shouts to that.
Oh man, no. Do we have to carry over? Because we started calling. We started calling Matt Thomas 21 average. Do we have to port over that nickname?
Well, I'm actually not allowed to stan anyone next season.
Yeah,
after the streak of Matt Thomas. And shout out to honorary Paizan Jalen Harris in Italy now. You know, best of luck to him for real. Damn. But yeah, I'm not allowed to stan anyone next season. So I'm going to be a objective journalist.
Well,
as I laugh I and wait. Say that. I couldn't even make it through the sentence.
Oh, yeah. I think honestly, I was pleasantly surprised by Delano. I think part of it was I was watching some of the tape. And there was not a lot of tape on Delano. I was watching some of the tape. It wasn't like jump off the page impressive. And then I was watching the first half of that Knicks Raptors game in Summer League. And I was like, what is going on? Why can't he make basic passes without turning the ball over for a layup? But no, he's really steadied himself in the last three games here. He's made a real impact. He's shown more toughness defensively than I expected. He's come up with a couple of really nice blocks. His length is a real factor. He's gotten on the boards. And genuinely speaking, I think he's still turnover prone in terms of he needs to cut mistakes down, but he seems to have pretty good vision in terms of that the playmaking ability out of that pick and roll, because it's fun passing from out of a 6'9" a set of hands. You can really pick out pretty much wherever set of the floor you want to. And that's he's had some good passes, even though maybe the assist numbers don't jump off the page. Again, the Raptors are like, they shoot like 5 for 30 from three every game. So it's just going to be tough to have assists. Blake, I mean, are you feeling the same way about Delano?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, to your point about his learning over the course of the tournament and the passing ability at 6'9", you know, you look at the last game, he has these two out of control charges in a row where there's a weak side shooter standing there. And the third time he comes down and makes a terrific pass to Justin Champagny. Out of like the exact same situation. And I've thought that there have been a couple instances of in-game learning from him throughout the course of Vegas. And, you know, talking to some coaches and stuff down there, that's the thing that stood out to them most about Banton too, is like, he's a very quick learner. And I think when you're a 6'9" point guard and someone doesn't try to move you off that position, you know, it's a pretty safe bet. That guy's got a good feel on offense. So for me right now, like, and even if he goes down to 905, like, make all the mistakes you got to make to figure out where the line is for you in terms of aggression and creativity. And like right now, some of the processing stuff is like a half step behind. Like, he knows where the offensive player is going to be, but he doesn't know how the defensive player is going to react to that yet necessarily. But that's next level stuff. Like, he's going to be a rookie coming in. And, you know, I think there's enough to be excited about there with the size and the passing. And like you said, you know, a little more toughness than you'd expect for a guy who's like 130 pounds or whatever he is. Got to get on that Ish Wainwright plan.
yeah. No, those two guys are, yeah, it's like spaghetti versus
the duality of man.
Fusilli? Right there. I don't know, man. Yeah. How do people have no like 25 pastas? Anyway, we have a guest joining in middle of the podcast. He's I guess he's in the admission process.
Straight from the barber's chair.
Yo, what's good, Big V?
Is he still in the barber's chair, man?
Nah, bro, come on, man. There we go, our man, is. Big V. What's going on? Is he just looking around? Can you hear
Big
us?
V, like, Big V, show your feet, man. Got to see if you're wearing sandals.
Yo, relax, bro.
Show your feet in the chat, man.
Yeah, this is the reveal. Oh my God. Will's taking the podcast to OnlyFans, and it's actually, pictures everyone's feet on the, while they record.
No, that's really Big V, though. That's really Big V, man.
He's frozen now, though.
This is tough. All right, well, Big V will join us at some point. This sounds like the ESPN broadcast with Raptors Warriors, man. That was a real tough one. I don't know if you watched I guess you were in person, so you didn't see.
Yeah, I watched the last game on TV, the one Gus Johnson was doing TikTok dances on. But
yeah, that wasn't nearly as good as Sam Mitchell and Jared Greenberg. Yeah, I can't take V's face seriously right now, man. What's going on?
Yo, please take a screenshot of this.
Yeah, it looks like the Mr. Krabs meme.
Please take a screenshot.
I got it. No, this is great. All right. Yeah, I mean, Delano's been fun. Obviously, the story's been really good. I don't know. Were you surprised that he got the guaranteed contract? That doesn't really matter to me, quite honestly. Like, I'm not trying to nitpick any of these guys. Raptors have plenty of roster spots, but I was a little bit surprised. I thought he was going to get the two-way, but.
No, I'm not surprised. There? And this is a little like cap minutiae, but when you sign a guy to a minimum contract, they count for team salary and like tax purposes as a 2-year vet min, unless they're your own second round pick. Then they only count as the minimum salary. So the Raptors right now are right up against the tax or possibly over it. So using one of those final spots on Banton actually saves them, you know, 700K. Under the tax or 740K under the tax. So I figured one of those guys would get that spot. You know, I thought the second they signed Champagne to a two-way as an undrafted free agent on draft night, you know, I figured one of Johnson or Banton would make the team outright. So not super surprised. You know, the guarantee structure is really player friendly. To get the full guarantee and a partial in year two is great. But I think it's cool. I think it's good for a guy like that to, you know, to be able to go in, especially, you know, I don't know if the Raptors thought about it at this granular level, but you talk about a guy who's developmentally right now, it's okay. You're maybe making too many mistakes, but we want you to keep trying that stuff and figuring it out. You don't want a guy like that looking over his shoulder the whole season and growing passive. So I also just think they like him a little better than maybe they like David Johnson and Justin Champagne, and then they liked all three, and one of them has to get an NBA deal. So,
yeah,
why not they're going to make all that money back in 905 jerseys.
Oh man, yeah, Blake. I was going to say because you know, back when you were a real hooper, a real blogger, I guess, a true hooper, a true blogger, you were commuting to Mississauga to go to all the 905 games. Are you gonna share with him, like, you know, where to transfer on the MyWay? Like, what's the most efficient route?
Yeah, I mean, he's coming from Rexdale, so he's got it way easier than I have it. I was coming from downtown. Rexdale's a easy shot. I don't know. Like, I used to. This is how budget I was, Alex. This is going to be even more budget than when we took the Greyhound to the Cavs series.
Oh yeah,
we gotta tell the story on this.
Nah, nothing is more budget than that, man. But okay,
dude, I would take story. So to public transit to the 905 games is like impossible. It takes like three transfers in like 2.5 hours. Yeah. So I would take the up to the airport, and then get the airport shuttle to the hotel that's closest to the arena in Mississauga, and then just walk from there.
Yo, this is what you need to tell Delano about, because he's gonna need these same tips, man. No one else would have thought about that.
Nah, his mom will drop him off.
Jesus. No, I've really enjoyed Delano's selection of just like, I think the Raptors probably gave him some team gear and he's like, I'm good, I have all of this.
Yeah.
and then he's like putting on his like, TJ Ford jersey from 2006. Like this.
Yeah. But a knockoff one, not the real thing.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I got it from Woodbine Mall. All right. Well, so what is this? What is the story though of you guys on the Greyhound? I know it already, but Alex, please tell it to the listeners. This is how much of you guys are real hoop heads.
Yeah, so what was this, Blake? This was 2016. This was the Eastern Conference Finals, and we were going to Game 5. So the Raptors had just tied the series up. Remember those two really exciting wins at Scotiabank Arena? And, you know, we took the Greyhound there. You know, it stops right when you cross, the border in Buffalo. That's the transfer. So, you know, hang out there, you know, grab a donut, go to the washroom, lots of suspicious characters.
Oh, man, that Greyhound station in Buffalo is rough. I'm sorry.
Like, yeah, I think it's right near where the Buffalo Bisons play. So we were there, and then we make the trip to Cleveland. We shared an Airbnb. It was actually a nice basement from what I remember.
Wow, two guys sharing a basement in Cleveland. All right, keep going.
Listen, man, this is, you know, you see all the successes and wins that we get on Twitter, but this is the behind the scenes that people don't see. You know,
this is where people are tweeting from.
This is when I tweet, never underestimate the heart of a champion. Oh, I'm in the washroom at a Buffalo terminal, Greyhound terminal. So
Reynolds, using Reynolds public and Wi-Fi I had, for that, man. That,
Reynolds and I had bed bugs time. One year at the Silver Sevens in Vegas. Like, it's not glamorous,
man.
On the way.
No, you got to do what you got to do, man. I've been in motels with three beds side by side. And
I'm not going to name the coach. But there was a Raptors coach at practice this week filling his backpack with all the free waters. This isn't exclusive to bloggers, man.
This is some real hoop heads, man.
So we went there.
There's two classes in the NBA, and that's for bloggers, players, coaches.
Yeah, so we went there, and obviously I think people who remember the game, I'm pretty sure the Raptors lost by like 55 points.
I think it's a record still.
Yeah, it was a massive blowout loss, and you know, Blake and I got settled in on Media Row in the first quarter, and the game was over. And then we recorded a podcast after, and then took the Greyhound home.
Yeah. So what time was that Greyhound, man? Come on, give us the details. This was like 4 a.m. and
no, so we recorded the podcast probably at 3-4 a.m. because I remember we went out that night, right, Blake?
Yeah.
We went out, hung out with some other people that were in town.
Was it at the casino that Corey Joseph and DeMar Carroll were casino. Spotted at?
It's either the Jack's Casino or there's a taqueria place.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Close by.
Alex and I went out with Steve Simmons is the real story.
Oh, wow.
No, that's the other. No, that was 2018. No.
God.
So. I have to learn a lesson. Yeah, we recorded the pod, I think, 3-4 in the morning, and I think our Greyhound was like 9 in the morning. And,
wow.
You know, never been so happy to be, back at the Greyhound terminal in Toronto.
Damn. Yeah, wow. No, this is really the life of media members. It's not glamorous. You know,
no,
that's Vivek can't even get internet to like hop on this podcast, man. this is a tip number two, man.
Vivek's calling tech savvy right now.
Yeah, no, Vivek's modem was on loan from CBC when the Olympics ended. He had to hand it back in.
Oh man! All right, we see his face now.
Yeah. So Vivek is back. Show your feet, bro.
Stop telling him to show his feet, man. He can't even hear us.
Frozen again?
Man.
What's going on?
I just want this to be the legacy of your last episode.
No, Vivek, his modem is... Right. Yeah, what's going on, bro? What's good, bro? Alex, ask him for a third time, please.
I told you this was going to be a problem.
Yeah. Show your feet, man. You're on that 5V connection, eh?
Yeah, there you go.
Nah, man, this guy got 25 streams up of, like, you know, super, like, cricket. We got, like, there's some rugby going on in the background.
Yeah, exactly,
some
man.
Sort of Canadian Open is somehow happening. that's what's going on, man. First off, congratulations, okay, Bruno Fernandes, performer of week one, of course.
Hey, you know? Shout out Pogba, though, 4 assists.
Oh yeah, also, God. Yeah, that's right. No, you guys got off to a hot start. We got off to a hot start. You know, just I'm looking forward to it.
Everything's going to be exciting, man.
Liverpool versus United at the top.
Four teams that can win it. Four teams that can win it.
Does that include City? No, I'm kidding. Right, this is all the EPL talk because these guys, you know, have no idea what we're saying.
No, man, no, we're talking Ted Lasso or what's going on, AFC Richmond right
here? Oh, jeez. V, I do want to say, though, man, in seriousness, great job with all the coverage during the Olympics. I really enjoyed it.
Wow. Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate that. It was super exciting. Like, I've never covered an Olympics before, and so I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
And they were bro, every morning, I woke up at 7 a.m. to watch women's basketball, women's hockey. And I will see a tweet on the timeline from CBC Olympics or CBC Sports, and it'll be V talking about like diving, sailing, like skateboarding, like any sport you could think of, man.
The skateboarding, I know that we're CBC, so it's Canadian, but like at no point in the skateboarding did anyone think to get like cool people to commentate the skateboarding, like. Like, what about...
Oh, wow.
No, I'm just like... Okay.
What are we doing, man? We're telling V to come on a show.
V wasn't the commentator for the skateboarding events.
He should have been, though. He should have been. I know he got... Yeah. I know he's got...
Oh, man. You're going to have Craig McMorris and Anastasia Bustis coming at you, man.
I want Tim Anderson, I think you should leave. Like, I want him on there. Tim Robinson, geez, I'm thinking baseball. I was going to say,
that's definitely an A's pitcher.
No, I was watching the White Sox game earlier, you know. Go Sox. It's Chicago sports time, man. The Bulls got DeMar now. Yeah. The White Sox are on the rise. It's, anyway, sorry.
I know V was serious about the Olympics because I also woke up every day to, like, V coverage. And, Will, you remember this. I sent this to you. He, like, posted this whole breakdown of, like, the first women's, I think, Canada women's soccer game.
Yeah, versus... I even DM'd him about it. I was like, why are they starting Christine Sinclair?
It was, like, a breakdown by minute. Things, yeah.
It was more detailed. Than...
It was so intense, man. I was like, all right, man, he's into it.
that was sick.
That's the way you got to be, though, man.
V, you earned your share of that gold medal, man. You.
Wow. I don't know about all of that, but...
No, me and V were in the DMs every morning talking about tactical, you know, adjustments and shit like that. Congrats to the Canadian
women. It was just
that
nice was to understand awesome the soccer tweets for once. And like, I was actually watching the games and knew what everyone was talking about.
You guys realize the final took 4 hours? Like, between the extra time, between the penalty shootouts, and then there's like the Olympics are really slow in like giving out the awards. Like, first, they got to come through with the flowers, but they can't put all the flowers in one basket. So they got to make like 10 trips for the flowers. Then they got to come through with the medals, and that's all like silver medals. Then they got to do it all over again. It took forever, but it was worth the moment, man. That was sensational.
But that was a cool day for Canadians because you had the
4x100 too.
Yeah. You had the 4x100. You had Mo Ahmed getting the silver and the 5,000. And so it was like we got gold, silver, and bronze.
And the decathlon was the day before, wasn't it? Two? It was just like bang, bang, bang of Canadian success.
Yeah.
And then also basketball happened, but I don't think Canada played in that.
Oh, man. Yeah. Hashtag mad love, man.
Oh, that was one thing I meant to share from Summer League, by the way. There was like, I included this in a notebook, but it's like like low-key Canada basketball had one of those when the Dream Team lost at the Olympics and had a summit after. Canada basketball had one of those in Vegas. There was
everyone from the program just breaking was out everything
there.
Now
so Shea was there, is that what you're telling me?
Shea was there. I didn't see Jamal, but I saw Shea. Like, Nick Nurse was obviously there. Some of the U19 guys were there. Zach Edey was on my flight back trying to fit into a regular person's seat.
Edey Pablo,
pardon.
That's an Edie Pablo. No. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. He's 7'4". Okay, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, keep on.
Yeah, North Carolina. It's so I don't know. I don't have like a ton of detail on it other than like everyone with the program on the men's side was down there for a couple days of like, are we serious about this and what do we need to do?
They must be stressed the fuck out, man. Two teams combined for what, one win? One Olympic win.
No, relax,
bro. You know how much look, I don't want to be too negative, but for Canada basketball to spend the money on flights for people, you know it's serious.
You know it's serious when they got Keyshawn as the main model.
Oh, that's right. We didn't even break this down, bro.
So I know a lot of money was poured into that. I know Keyshawn isn't cheap. Oh, so, my God.
Yo, they couldn't pay for Keyshawn to get a haircut, though? What's going on, man?
Keyshawn's contract now as a photographer stipulates that he also gets to be the model.
Yeah, he probably shot that all by himself. It was a one-person shoot.
This guy set the timer and then ran into the photo.
It's Alex on vacation, man. It's quick Google how to set self-timer iPhone.
Wow. Oh, Keyshawn's 22 years old. He's not even listening to a podcast. He's not going to hear these bars.
No, he really won't. No. He really won't.
That's hilarious.
Are we talking about you yet, or what's going on, man?
Me? Well, that's not about me. I honestly thought
this podcast was just going to be about you.
Yeah, all our favorite memories of Will and Will's content.
You dragging me to talk about Summer League? You know what I'm saying, man? Come on, man.
What do you think?
You pressing me with two questions about Precious Achiuwa got me shook, man. I was trying to throw it to Blake every time, man. Got me on my CBC radio business voice, you know, talking about the development system.
Alex, what are your thoughts on Zacchaeus Darko Kelly?
Goodness, man. Who is that, man? Darko Milicic's just cousin? Yeah.
No, he's like the best player in NAIA history, apparently.
Oh, man. Yeah. What league is that? No, I legit thought we were, like, bigging you up and, like, just spending, like, a whole hour.
For an hour doing this?
Talking about how great you are and stuff. But I guess not.
No, we don't need to do that, man. We don't need to do that.
Damn, man.
Well, unless you want to, go ahead. I mean,
yeah, it's the truth, though, is the thing.
I was just gonna ask V about his job at the Raptors, but all right, well, yeah, I guess we can skip that.
Oh yeah,
V can't speak about that. He's a mole inside the organization for me now.
So yeah, I was gonna say all the sources are coming from V. All right, listen. How do you think I broke so much stuff lately? That was all V, baby.
Blake is breaking everything.
Yeah,
I mean,
from you, it's all from V.
From you,
everything comes from. V, I already know MLSE's plans for the next 6 months. I'm hijacking this pod. Let's go around right now, me, V, and Blake, and just say some words about Will's.
I'm not dying, man. Yo, I'm still gonna be covering the Raptors.
No. Yeah, no, Will's career is done. So V, maybe we can start with you, man. Since the three of us, you know, obviously me, Will, and V were part of the illustrious 2019 Yahoo team. Which has broken up just like the Raptors.
No, that wasn't the Raptors.
The parallels are actually hilarious.
I'm in Will's DMs every night reminiscing about please go to sleep. V, what can you share just about, you know, experience at Yahoo and obviously Will's coverage there?
I think the number one memory will always be going to game one of that 2019 run. And Kyle Lowry drops 0 points. So we decided we were going to do like a live post game show
in studio.
So we had to get from the arena to the Yahoo office, like stat.
Yeah, it's like 15-minute walk between Scotiabank and King Espinata, and there's a lot of people. Yeah,
and. The whole way there, Will is just in my ear. This man scored 0 points, bro. 0 points. We're doing this shit again. Like, how are we doing this again? Listen to this.
like on the street out loud.
The entire way to the studio. And then we get in there and Will's like, yeah, you know, game one, shit happens. Move on.
No, the people don't know that, like, the best, maybe obviously a lot of people have been following Will for a long time and his Raptors coverage, but newer people don't know the best Will is when the Raptors lose. Like, for the longest time, all those years when the Raptors collapsed in the playoffs, like, obviously I followed Will's coverage all the time, but I particularly looked for it after the losses. Because you just wanted to feel that emotion from Will. Blake, you know, obviously I know you and Will. I love how I just took over this podcast, man. Blake, it's all good. You obviously have a great, you know, a long back story history with Will. I know you guys got to be together after they won game 6 in Oakland during the 2019 run. Just what are your memories? And just seeing how far, you know, Will has come, you know, cutting – cutting back certain language on his tweets and things like that.
Yeah. Still not reigning in the ref stuff, though. That's
No, listen, man. It's a conspiracy. They're against Canada, man.
It's the worst bit is like the four or five people who, whenever Will complains about the refs, send me the tweet being like, see? I'm like, yes, I know. I know Will complains about the refs too, guys. But no, I think, you know, obviously Will and I have a long relationship back to, you know, him sending, since we were talking about Summer League earlier, let's bring it home, Summer League MVP, Jonas Valanciunas, Will sending us a breakdown of JV at Summer League for Raptors Republic and kind of working with him through that and getting him on at RR. And then, you know, he kind of followed me to the score and then started doing his own thing. It's been great to see the growth. And I think, honestly, you know, all three of you and a handful of others, you know, the Dishes and Dimes crew coming up, a lot of the RR alum, have a hand in kind of changing how at least basketball media has been viewed in this country. And like, it's gotten younger, it's gotten, maybe not in the traditional channels yet, but it's gotten younger, it's gotten more diverse, it's gotten more, you know, aware of the fact that we are conduits between the fan base and the team. Like, it's not this like crazy deep thing all the time, and it can be, but like at its core, you know, it's an entertainment thing, and it's part of connecting the fans of the team. And I don't think anyone has struck that note as cleanly and made it as feasible professionally as Will has over these years. So obviously a huge fan of his work and his voice, and you know, seeing him turn on JV was hard to become the number one voice against JV Hive.
I was giving analysis like 800 words to 1,000 words on just Lithuania at Eurobasket, the way that I got to know some of these other Lithuanians on the team that I've never heard from again. You know, like, no, man, it was a good time. Shout out to Baltic Giants.
Game six was great, though. Like having to stop you from hugging me a little bit because I'm like, yo, I'm on press row. I don't want to lose my press pass.
No, it was literally right me.
We head downstairs.
Yeah, we were in Oakland. It was me, Blake, Chris Haynes. Chris Haynes is there literally like scribbling on his, like, he's trying to do the ballots for the finals MVP, like some real serious shit. Okay. He actually
I'm whispering Fred VanVleet.
Yo, I'm not even kidding. I told him, I was like, yo, based on this game, Fred, because it was in the fourth quarter. I mean, he wasn't the guy who put Fred, but shout out Hubie. I tried to get him to get Fred a second vote. As you guys remember, there was that long ass timeout because Draymond committed that random foul with 0.9 seconds left. So there was like a long period of confusion. And during that time, it clicked me. I was like, yo, we're really going to win the championship here. And I grabbed Blake's arm and I was like, yo, holy shit, we're here. They're going to win. And Blake's like, bro, please. I'm working. Let me go, man. But
cool, you, man, smoking the cigar is the, that's the lasting image until we get a Kyle Lowry statue. They need a video board outside of Scotiabank. That's just you smoking that cigar until they get the statue built.
But I think, Will, that goes to like how impressive it is that you do what you do, because like I learned early that I had to separate my emotional connection to be able to like actually analyze the game and analyze the Raptors properly. But you're able to be all the way in it and then step back right away. And then, you know, whatever it is you're breaking down, you know, it comes across as completely like professional and to the point. So, you know, I think that's...
What are you gonna bring up, man? The media row antics, man. It's been a while. This is the closest we've had to like pre-pandemic sitting on media row.
Yeah, we should all be eating a hot dog right now.
Yeah, man. I was gonna say, Alex, you didn't send us each a little bulk barn bag this pod.
Oh man, no, but I think both of you make great points about kind of Will's point of view and approach, and I just want to keep complimenting him because I know it makes him extremely uncomfortable.
This is gonna be a roast, man.
And, you know, so always said,
we're trying to see how big that head can be.
Yeah,
you're seeing it right now, bro.
You're about to see his forehead as well.
Look at his forehead, man. Yo,
this guy's got me wearing a toque.
You could play seven aside on that thing, man.
But listen, man. Don't distract from the main discussion, which is you. Listen, listen, you're like Shohei Ohtani, man. You know, the way you do 10 things and a React pod, that's like Ohtani pitching and hitting, man. You know,
I'm glad you said it, because it would have been super racist if I said you was like Ohtani.
Yeah, you also remind me of Hideki Matsui at times.
Hiroshi Tanahashi.
You know, Daisuke Matsuzaka with the way you just like mix it up, mix your pitches up. No, but Will, man, like honestly, like, you know, obviously we've done a lot of work together, yeah. You know, the last couple of years, you know, I think we've obviously known each other more, you know, before this, but like the last few years is probably the most we've ever, I guess, you know, been together from like a work on like a work basis, you know, literally talking to each other every week, you know, doing our show and things like that. And, you know, I appreciate you, bro. Like that's it. You know, I think I tell you a lot of things all the time, you know, but like, that's it, man. You know, I think Blake made a really good point too, you know, like the four of us and a lot of other people here in Toronto, you know, I feel like, to be honest, like, I don't think we need to sugarcoat it. Like we shape a lot of the coverage, you know, and we shape the direction of how people kind of see the team and the conversations that we should have, you know, from the work that Vivek does, obviously Blake, Will, you know, myself tweeting the same four things all the time. I think we all do very important work, and Will, you've put in the work, you know, every Raptors game you're there, you know, conspicuously missing, you know, last weekend for a summer league game. That's okay.
Yo, I went camping one time, man.
Fine, man. I guess you need to have a life sometimes, you know, you're not fully dedicated, but it's fine. But you know, whatever next steps you take in your career, you know, I'll be there supporting you. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll be trying to get a check. I understand how this goes, man. No, I honestly, like, first off, a huge thank you to everything you guys are saying. Like, it's really nice to hear. We're not gonna be LeBron and be like, you know, it's really humbling to, you know, the people call me, you know, all these things. No, I appreciate that. But I think for me, like personally, the best part about working in this business is like the people. And I've been really lucky to work with all of you. Blake, obviously going back to the RR days at the Score as well. Just working directly, and of course, like, you know, we've been close ever since then, but getting to work with Alex and Vivek the last few years, especially at Yahoo, like, it was a great opportunity. Like, I think the vision of what the team put together there was fantastic, because, you know, maybe it looks better in retrospect because you're like, well, of course they had this team together, but I think before that happened, like, we had to sort of at least prove in terms of like why we got in these spots, right? Like, I was just like, I mean, I was writing and stuff at the Score and stuff like that, but like, you know, that coverage wasn't mainstream, that wasn't consistent, that didn't have to hit different audiences, that didn't have to hit a bigger audience across different verticals. And I think that opportunity was there. But, you know, it was really cool seeing you guys come up too, man. I mean, of course, like, Blake has always been light years ahead of the game, and like, we're all still trying to catch up to Blake. But, you know, watching, you know, V, you know, everything that you're doing, man, it's been really impressive. And even with Alex, not to make you feel old, man, but like, I was a fan of Alex before I got to know Alex, and no longer am I a fan. I'm just a friend of Alex now. I'm like, yeah, this is just a regular dude.
I thought you were going with like Alex fell off.
No, you didn't fall off.
Man, I'm Jadakiss, man. People appreciate me in 15 years, man.
Alex is going to be on blog versus. It's just like, it's versus, but you just drop a quick take. You got one paragraph.
Yo, we'll bust out the songs, man. I'll go head to head with anyone. No,
that's how much Alex writes in a anyway, it's just one paragraph.
So. Stop telling people about my plans, man.
Oh, by the way, bro, we have to talk about your book, man. We fight all the time. We joked about
this. This is all the promo I get on your damn farewell.
Yeah. This is all you're getting in the hour mark of the episode.
Come on, man. Go
that
Google.
That is just purely self-serving,
just
man.
Just go Google Alex Wong cover story on any book site. In order, man. It was top 100 on Amazon this week.
I thought it was top one, or what was it?
It was like the top 100 of all books on Amazon this week.
But in sports,
number
what was
one
it?
In basketball, number one in number sports one. Journalism. I appreciate everyone's support. Number this week, one. You know, put the pre-orders out. You know, obviously, you guys were super supportive. Always been supportive as well. Yeah. So.
I'm actually going to pay money for your book.
Yeah, you know, pay money for this book. I'm working on a Raptors book right now, actually. That'll be out 2023.
Wow, okay.
About the origin of how the Raptors Scottie came Barnes. To Toronto. And the first season, I've been workshopping some names, but, you know, we'll leave that for later. There's my promo. But back to you.
That's it? All right.
Yeah, man.
All right. I thought you were going to do like a live reading of like a chapter or something.
No, I'm not trying to spoil your party. It's about you, man.
All right. No, but no, seriously, though. It's the best part about working this is like seeing everybody grow and like the, you know, obviously going to a game, everything is fun, but like going to the game and like, you know, man, it's like 7:30 game. We all get there like 5:30. Blake's there from 3 o'clock. For some reason, Blake lives at the arena. But like
Alex is just like scoping out Nelson or Keyshawn's car to like get the shit kicked courtside. It's like, yo, the second you come in.
Oh man, does Rovan listen to this?
Yeah, anyway, make sure you get Alex's press credential for next year. Please. He needs it. His Instagram game needs it. No, but that's the best part, man, honestly. And like I joke about the media row stuff, but like it's been really fun just like watching on these games with you guys. Like I can't really imagine you guys not being there at the game, and I'm just like freaking out on media row, and like the photographer like 16 chairs down is like, yo, can you shut the fuck up and try to take a photo? Like he probably did say that, I just didn't hear it because you guys were around me and stuff. So no, it's cool, man. I mean, in terms of playoff moments, like that was, you know, just being able to like sharing all those with you guys. I mean, the championship run was like sensational, right? But like, you know, getting to do all those episodes with you guys, just even just taking in those moments with you guys. I remember even after game six, it was like the Eastern Conference Finals. It was like probably 4 o'clock after, like 3:30 in the morning after I was done coverage and Blake was done coverage. And, you know, I hugged him and I think I might have even lifted you up and we took a photo together and stuff. Like it was, that's the kind of stuff that like, I mean, you know, maybe as like professional media is like harder to justify in terms of like, I'm clearly not going to lift like Doug Smith and do this, but like, which would be pretty funny if I did. But I think that's the coolest part is like having to work with your friends, man. And that is the absolute, absolute best part of doing this, you know? So I appreciate you guys, man.
Yeah. I mean, Alex, I remember the Eastern Conference Finals. We did the post game show right after game six. And I remember those first 5 minutes, we just sat there and we were just so content. And we were just like, God, I just want to sit here and like soak this moment in. And like those are things that I'll always remember, right? Like where we were like, at those different moments when they happened. And like, yeah, like you said, the parallels between that Yahoo team and the championship team, like we went all out. And yeah, I'm not going to say too much, but we knew we were doing something great because we had some people shook.
That's true.
No, we also got a lot of feedback, you know, from people around the city, and I'm sure you guys did too. You know, I had a lot of people, you know, in the sports broadcasting industry that, you know, I've never really talked to that reached out and just wanted to say nice things about us. And, you know, shouts again to a lot of the team, you know, shouts, obviously, you know, Dan Tolman, Mac, and all the people kind of putting us, in these positions, right? You know, I think obviously it's on us to execute and all that stuff, but you need people to believe in you in this industry too. And I think, especially sometimes in Toronto, I think it's hard. You know, sometimes there is a huge divide between, say, you know, digital media and like traditional media and like traditional Raptors faces that people are used to. But I think more and more it's just hard to ignore that the work that all of us are doing and the way that we're, like Blake was saying earlier, the way we're connecting with the fans and stuff like that. So, you know, as with every podcast I've ever done with Will, I've turned it into a referendum on media in Toronto. So,
yo, come on, man. It feels like
my job is done.
It feels like you have strong feelings about this, man.
The biggest thing Dan and Mac did was they just let us be us.
Right? Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
In terms of content, whatever it was. Yeah. They were like, hey, we consider you guys to be the ones that are going to be communicating with the fans. You guys have done a great job of doing that already. So just do it how you do it. Yeah. And then that made our lives that much easier.
Yeah.
I mean, like, think about it, V. Like, I don't know about you, but like, I hadn't done a lot of video up to that point, you know, in terms of doing video work. You know, a lot of, I think you and me, and you, I don't know, Will, obviously you've done podcasts, but then we transitioned more to like a video stuff with like even like Kawhi Watch and V, you were talking about. And you know, some of my favorite memories was doing those post game shows, you know, me, you, and, you know, Toronto Tyler legend Ennis. Harrison Sanford. Tyler Ennis.
How are you going to leave Tyler Ennis out of this, man?
Shout out Tyler Ennis. I only shout out people who could potentially be listening.
Not him then.
But no, just V, like doing all those shows with you. You're talking about like the conference finals and all that stuff. I remember when the Raptors went down 2-0 against Milwaukee, like I was so down on them. And Harrison's just like, no, man, you don't know basketball. And I guess I didn't know basketball. And I'm grateful for that. The Raptors came back. Bro, I had a vacation booked. I had a vacation booked to like Cuba or like the Dominican Republic. I was on the last page to pay now. And then I was like, all right, let's just wait till after game three. And then, you know, Chris Middleton missed that shot and the rest is history. You know what I'm saying?
Will, you had that episode after the championship run where you had like 20 people on.
This is my idea for this show. So cool. That's my idea for this show. Although I don't have a producer right now to help me with that, so I can only do what I can. But I think that's the whole idea. Was like, I just wanted to like A, talk to you guys because you're my friends, but like B, like, I think like sort of celebrate and sort of make these conversations happen in maybe a larger platform, just because like I think these are probably more authentic to the conversations that you would probably have with your friends. And that was always the goal, so to speak, from that perspective. So now I appreciate you guys. I don't V. Okay, so I was trying to look up the numbers before getting into this podcast. It was too many to count, but V is definitely the podcast appearance leader. Alex is number two, but it was like, I was making a list of like the first few guests and I kind of quit after like a month of episodes, 'cause there were already way too many at that point. But yeah, V, you were so Blake was the first ever guest. Alex was the second ever guest. V, you were the third. Then I got Mo Dakil. Great to follow on Twitter and just a great video guy. Sirit, so he came on the podcast, which is amazing. And then Serge Ibaka. So you guys were all on the pod before Serge, which is just a random step. But no, but seriously, though, V, you're probably on here like once every six episodes. Right? I was looking throughout the playoffs and like every single one was just V. Any single time I needed anything, I'd be like, because you and I sat together in the office. I was just like, yo, you want to talk? You want to talk? You want to talk? You're like, all right, fine, man.
Yeah. But, no, yeah, this sometimes we'd record like right in the executive suite right after the game.
Well, the yeah. Ernst & Young, the legendary yeah. Ernst & Young room.
Yeah. Thank you to Ernst & Young, the unofficial.
Yeah, shout out to Ernst & Young. No, this is the thing, man. Like Blake's obviously doing his important things at the Athletic, and then Vivek, you know, was hopping on the podcast. And I always know you make it clear to me, Will. I'm the option when anybody drops out. When anybody drops out, or when you need like good vibes when they're like in the midst of like losing 11 out of 12,
you
just bring me on to say my same four slogans, and here we go.
The people love you guys. What can I say, man?
I am the campaign manager.
No, your campaign, you're dancing. I'm Russell Westbrook.
Underestimate the positivity of Alex Wong.
That's honestly the dynamic, man.
All right. I think this probably cuts off, I guess, the first half of the episode. So if you guys want to dip or if you guys got other things to do, go ahead. If you guys want to stay on, you guys can as well. But I'm going to try to bring on the second half of the crew. All right. Joining us, I guess, for the second half of the show, more people to I don't know, man. This is a real self-serving last episode. This show's about the fans. This show's about the fans. And no one embodies that more than Josh Hart, my call-in show co-host, calling and taking calls from fans. Josh, I think obviously people know who the real MVPs of the call-in show are. That's obviously Vitaly, that's Kate, our other regular callers. If you had like one like just random deep cut favorite caller, who would it be?
I remember the one that comes to mind immediately was on the first show, or the first or second show. This guy called in and was asking about Raptors free agent targets, same stuff we always talk about.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking about like the hope to get Giannis. And he said, Giannis is a fraud. And I was like, what?
Yo.
Like, the Raptors beat in the playoff, Giannis is a fraud. And every time, because what happened after that was the Bucks flamed out in the playoffs against the Miami Heat. And
yeah,
he was right. Like it was an amazing call.
Yeah.
You know. A year out, and they so salute to that man.
Yeah,
but the call-in show was great. I'm amazed that
your idea, man. That was the thing. That was all your idea. I don't get any credit for that. That was all you. You came to me like years before that, or maybe not years, but at least 1 or 2 years before that, saying like, "Hey, this should be a thing. You should be Raptors Mike Wilner." And then we made that happen, and it was like obviously like a huge credit to the producers as well. The technical side was never easy to figure out with that show, as evidenced by our last episode, which I had to, even just for the audio portion, I had to really heavily pare down. But no, man, that was all you, man. I gotta give a salute to Vin Baker. He really came on strong in the I guess the second or third iteration of the show. Who else?
Ilhan, I hope that she's doing great in her first year. She asked us if she should go to Carleton or Ottawa U, and we never found out what her decision was.
Let us know. Maybe not call us anymore, but at least send us a DM or something.
Let us know if you decided to go to Carleton went on.
You didn't want? I thought you were going to give some Carlton propaganda, man.
I did share Carlton propaganda, but I remember asking, like, what program do you want to get into? And didn't know. And I was like, well, that should be, you know, that's your biggest priority.
Yeah, nah, I think that is. But you know what it is? It's real messed up when you ask, like, 17, 18-year-olds to make decisions for the rest of their lives. Like, I don't know shit. When I was 17, I definitely was not concerned about making a Raptors podcast. First off, podcasts weren't really invented. And second of all, as much as I love the Raptors, I was going to do, like, a real job, I guess. But
you started as, like, an econ? No, bio. Then
yeah.
Then econ. Uh-huh. Then, I don't know, I think in your third year, you declared your major was marijuana. And then...
but that's part of the curriculum. Like, I don't know what you... I mean, I don't know, man. I think... So third year I switched, but like I was so many credits into a chemical biology degree that the academic advisor is like, look, if you took three more courses here, you're going to get this degree. Like, even if you don't want it, like, you should probably do it. I mean, it's a lot of money spent on this. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I got to leave. But that was before, you know, like I started doing like student journalism and all that stuff. And I think that's probably where it kind of launched me into this current trajectory. But that was sick.
Like, that changed your life.
Yeah, people don't know pre-Raptors me, I guess, which is probably for the best, to be honest.
Like,
that's true, yeah.
Influenced your personal life in a way that I don't think you're going to talk about now, but also your professional life in, like,
absolutely
amazing ways. It defined you that you,
yeah.
And, you know, you and I share a passion for student journalism and university papers and
hope
to one day be able to support that community through the opportunities afforded by talking about Raptors. But I think the one takeaway from the Colin show and the stuff that we do is, like, if you are a university student anywhere in the world,
mm-hmm.
especially in Ontario,
run
up on your sports editor, or when I was at Carleton, the media editor,
mm-hmm.
and ask them for an opportunity, because
they'll say yes. They'll definitely say yes. They need help. They're understaffed. They're looking for volunteers. People flake out all the time. Well, not flake out. People just get busy and they stop sticking with it. Like, so definitely, yeah. That's our best advice. That's why we wanted to make our ROEs for the kids, our scholarship funds, which, you know, technically could still happen. Maybe just on an unofficial sense, but you know.
Yeah, no, it's been
it was a real idea.
Amazing two years. I remember pitching Dan the Colin show.
Yeah,
literally in an elevator at 99.
Oh, that's right, because we had figured out we need a Rodecaster, which is a special like mixer / like soundboard, and it costs $800. And we were like, "There's no way he's gonna go for this." It's a lot of money. We don't have a proven concept of this show. We don't necessarily have experience doing this show. And then I think salute to the Yahoo office elevators that work quite slow. but no, he was talked into it like immediately. You were very persuasive. Although Dan was always a guy who was willing to say yes to like content ideas, you know.
Yeah, Dan was a great executive at Verizon and mm-hmm. gave lots of people opportunities. Also, salute, like, it, the thing that sticks out to me is like getting Ashley to work on our stupid show.
Oh my god. Salute Ashley. She's Ashley probably watching like
Emmy award winning producer.
Wow, that's correct. Yeah.
And this is actually, Toman said, can you help Will and Josh with their, you know, frankly ridiculous idea? And she did, and she made the show what it is. Like, I don't think it would have worked. Also, you know, Amit, Kieran, Stephanie.
Ben,
oh my goodness.
Chelsea.
Aaron. Yeah. Louisa, it was awesome.
Yep.
I miss working at the
she probably
Spadina.
I was gonna say Louisa was always good for Rex Still stories, like, but before Delano Banton, there was Louisa.
Her jersey was the 36. She repped a different bus.
That's correct. Oh man.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling fine, man. I mean, I think I'm just very happy with, first off, like, just very thankful for the opportunity that Yahoo was able to give to me, because I think not only did that give me an opportunity to sort of develop and grow my career, and I think it was the best job I ever had, like, period, not even close, But it was also a situation where we had great leadership that was really open to ideas. So I was able to bring in a lot of people that I thought could really work. And it's not like I don't look at you guys like I birthed you guys. You know, that's not what happened. But like, you know, I got a chance to work with you in an on-air setting. I got a chance to work with Alex, who is still on the Zoom call, by the way. He's just lurking in the background on mute without the video. Dog, this is freaky, all right? But I know you're there, okay?
What's up, guys? Alex, you guys are doing a great job. You guys are doing a great job. I'm just here listening, catching up on some emails. I don't want to wake up early tomorrow and have to listen to this podcast, so I just want to listen to it here. So I'm tapping out for now. Have a great chat, guys.
Wow. All right. No, you can still stay, man. But anyway, in any case, I got to work with everybody. You know what I mean? And that was really cool. Like I got to, you know, work with, you know, and really just, I think the point of that is like, you get to tap into sort of the elements and sort of the ideas that everyone else has. Because if it was just me, it would just be a really self-serving show, kind of like this last episode, and people will get tired of it pretty quickly. But I think that, you know, getting your takes, getting just like all the interactions, I think is very important. But before we talk about all that, Josh, so we brought this up in the first half of the episode, because for the first half, we had Blake on, we had Alex, we had Vivek. And for some reason, I decided to go very straight basketball talk with these guys, just asking for their summer league opinions. And, you know, we kind of arrived at the conclusion that Delano, despite having a guaranteed contract, is probably going to spend a lot of time in the with the 905. So transit options, this is, I'm actually thinking about it now. Like it would actually be a very, very difficult transit. If he's driving, it's a lot easier to go from Mexico to Mississauga, obviously bordering, but I don't know, man, if he has to take my way in TTC, like it's going to be a real rough ride. But what are your thoughts on Delano so far?
I'm going to be cheering for Manton in a way that's irrational, but he's, look pretty like a real guy, like a guy who has real skills that can develop in the NBA. I was not expecting him to be as coordinated as he is. And he's not, you know, perfect in that respect at all. But I've been really excited to watch Banton play. But, you know, like, will he be able to be an effective... the thing that I'm curious about him, like, will he be a guy who can get downhill in a Raptors offense? Like, can he work a dribble handoff where he has the option to take the man under the basket if he can? Mm-hmm. That stuff, I'm like, not, I don't really see any of that yet, but who knows?
Yeah.
But the passing is good. Like he's a guy who can see over the top of most defenders and has a pretty good, passing touch.
I was gonna say, like, that makes a lot of sense, because I think the idea of what Delano can get to and the upside is higher than some of the other guys that they've sort of taken flyers on in the past. And the Raptors have done a pretty good job of just taking flyers on guys, but like the upside with a guy like Delano is higher than, you know, taking a flyer on Utah, right? I think Utah is very serviceable, but you kind of see that the peak of what Utah can do is be a reliable 3-and-D guy off the bench, which is valuable. Keep you in the league for a while. Clearly, he's a guy who's very unselfish, does work for the team. But you don't see the playmaking element that Delano is able to introduce. The ability to create their own shot, to get downhill, that attacking mindset. It's just totally night and day, right? It's different than getting a Matt Thomas into the program, for example. Matt Thomas is cool, man. We had a lot of, you know, we had a lot of moments with Matt. You know,
is he guaranteed next year in Utah?
No, I think they waived him. Wow.
Yeah, just chiming in here, guys. As a producer on the show, the Jazz recently waived Matt Thomas. I'm muting myself once again. Have a great chat.
Okay.
The Iceman. That's really damn,
Iceman Paul Wall.
Paul Wall would be it. That's crazy. I'm actually quite surprised that they've, because
Though, like, that's, there's like an upside element to Delano that's like not there with some of these other guys. Even with Terrence Davis, who, putting aside all the just the at least the heinous accusations, things like that. Like, even as a basketball player with the skills, I think he was productive in the sense that he could shoot, but like he just wasn't there and the other elements of the game. Wasn't a defender, didn't think the game at a high level, didn't set up other guys, didn't have a defensive impact the way Delano could potentially have. And I think that kind of excites me. I think the overall, I guess the overall group, I think is exciting to me. This is something I mentioned in the first half of the show too, but I wanted to get your thoughts in terms of like, you know, this is a generational shift, right? Kyle's gone. We've gone through this whole period. I guess we can call it the We the North era, and then the We the Champs era. And then all these guys go, right? Guys that you love, guys like Serge, Mark, you know, Kyle, Danny, Kawhi, right? I may be missing some guys as well, but like JV, DeMar, right? Like all these guys are gone, but you kind of have to make that space for a new group to grow with. Like, I guess we're at the very outset of it. We're like a penny stock at this moment. Like, how are you feeling about the Raptors, like young group and as a penny stock at the moment? What excites you? What worries you? Give us your emotional.
The thing that I think is really interesting is having these guards who can rebound. Okay. Like an interest and who can defend. Like, I'm not sure how they are as initiators, but as play connectors, I feel pretty confident in them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an interesting way to develop a team. I think the thing that you talked about a lot and we've talked about on the Colin show was the timeline for this team and how they're building their young core. You had the Fred, Pascal, OG, Norman Powell core. And I guess by switching out Norm for Gary Trent Jr., whatever you think of that, but then seeing the next core, at the end of last year was just Malachi Flynn and get maybe Jalen Harris that you had there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as much as Malachi showed, you know, winning Rookie of the Month in April and Jalen Harris's great game against the Mavericks, you were like, what is the identity of this group? Like,
yeah, just
got like small guards who are like trying to score a lot.
Yeah.
I know Jalen Harris was listed at 6'5", but
no, that was a Fred VanVleet 6'1". Yeah.
Yes. Fact. Yeah. But seeing this crop of, you know, big guards who can defend and rebound is mm-hmm. this interesting element. I think that that's a kind of interesting young core to come up behind OG and Pascal. And what I'm hoping they find there is more reliable playmaking options to mm-hmm. back up those guys. And maybe one day eventually we'll find a shooter who can help yeah. these teams have. Like the thing that I don't like is there's still no clear indication what their half court offense of the future is.
Right, right. It's almost like they're not thinking about it.
Yeah.
Which is strange. I think maybe the prevailing thought in the past was like you can get defenders easily. Defenders are undervalued. But the Raptors have gone almost they have approached defense and especially versatile defenders who have long wingspans that can guard multiple positions. They've almost approached that like that is the most valuable trade in the market, which it probably is. I think they probably have identified that. And they probably identified that guys who can create in the half court are probably less valuable than what it would appear when you watch the game. Maybe that's the eye test that does seem you know, maybe the most valuable is when you see a guy who can take the last second shot and it's a fadeaway and he makes a jumper and you're like, that guy won the game for us. Whereas, you know, the Raptors probably see the 47 minutes and 55 seconds before that where, like, guys were making rebounds, guys were taking charges, guys were, you know, swiping the ball, guys were denying one side of the floor, and so this guy got neutralized and the game got into close enough in the position where the last shot could be deciding in their favor. Like, that's probably what the Raptors have gone with. And, you know, that's cool to me. I think that it's different than what the rest of the league is trying to do. You know, even the way they play defense is the way that's different than the rest of the league. The rest of the league has, you know, gone back to essentially drop defenses with a big, with a Rudy Gobert, with like a Brook Lopez, with like, you know, DeAndre Ayton even. And okay, you come back and you try to take away the paint and you sort of give up a couple of shots. The Raptors have approached defense now, like they're not going to give up anything. Like, forget, like, oh, yeah, we'll give up the mid-range or we'll give up the pull-up three at the top like Milwaukee or we'll give up, you know, whatever, the corner three. Raptors are saying we're not giving up anything.
All these Midwest teams, like, and that's the thing. It'll be interesting to see the teams that follow suit because you're seeing, like, Chicago had this, like, switchy defense that they scrapped last year. Like, they just said, this is, look, we have for friggin' Lauri Markkanen. What are we trying to do here? That guy is as mobile as you or me. That's yeah. not just, you know, glorious. if you're still out there. If he's, but
he's listening. He's actually the next guest we're bringing into the episode.
No, I do wonder what the culture shift in Toronto does across the league, because having these teams that sacrifice nothing on defense and demand a lot, especially from their bigs, and their guards are expected to be quite physical. I do wonder if it'll have an influence. Like, are we going to see these teams, you know, scoring 86 points against the Raptors? And if so, does the league go that way? And do we see pace numbers completely fall off the cliff?
Yeah, no, the way the Raptors are building their current roster is similar to the way I used to be the GM for the Raptors Republic tournament teams, where I knew who my scorer was essentially, but we were just going to hope to like get some guys with some length, with some like bucket, forget the buckets, just guys who can play hard, play some defense, and ultimately give the ball to one guy. And that's Assad. Assad, man, what's going on?
I'm good, man. How you doing? How you doing? Of course, man.
Thanks for making time. I know you're busy. You're knee deep in a, what are you doing? Accounting stuff, Alex, you know, weigh in. What kind of accounting stuff would, what an accountant be doing in August 15th?
You know, he's probably just looking at the bad debts right now, you know, looking at
that was 30 minutes ago. I'm actually doing a payroll analytic right now.
Yeah, he's doing some payroll analytics. He's probably following up with some intern at the poor company who doesn't have no idea what Assad's talking about, and Assad has no idea what he's talking about. So I think that's about it.
All right. Alex, so for the past 40 minutes, Alex has just been, you know, mute and silent, but with the rare exception of when we talked about whether Matt Thomas was cut from Utah. And he chimed in, and now this. So I'm happy he's still here. Assad, man, I appreciate you for joining me on the last episode of Raps Over Everything. Obviously, all the slander episodes we've done somehow hasn't gone back to us, man. We haven't had that much blowback from it, which is surprising. I do wonder if that will be the case moving forward. But, you know, it's been real, man. What was your favorite slander pod moment, I guess, if I had to start there? If you had to pick one. So I definitely have one in mind. I have one in mind.
Yo, so there are two that stand out to me more than any of them.
Okay.
And the one I'm going to pick is the one that was more important. But the first one was, like, they're both against Philly.
Okay.
There was Joel Embiid's 0-point game.
Yeah, that's what I had in mind.
That was epic. But it was actually the playoffs game one that was the best slander pod. Because that one.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So this is what happened. So, like, I got tickets to go to game one from, you know, very generous person on Twitter, shout out to him. So we go to game one, watch game one. Pascal and Kawhi just eviscerate the Sixers,
they had like 74 points, something like
that. Just annihilate them by themselves, like not missing a shot. It was crazy. And like as like we're watching the game, there's a Sixer fan behind us who just like throws his shirt like in a drunken rage, three rows ahead of him, and then walks out, which is, you know, hilarious.
Did he call Ben Simmons a crumb bum?
No, it was Michael Rubin, actually.
At that time, he was very upset at Brett Brown. He's like, Brett Brown doesn't know how
to go. It was Michael Rubin, actually.
All right.
So anyways, leave the game. We're hyped. And then I'm walking back to, like, the parking structure that's, like, on Church, I think, or something like that, right? The big parking structure. And I'm sitting there. And like, there's just a lineup of cars going out. So I'm just on Twitter and I see that video of Drake just telling all the players to get the fuck out of there. Get the fuck out of here, you know, going one by one. And I hit up Will, and Will's like, yo, let's do a slander pod. And I'm like, all right, I'm not going to get out of this parking structure anytime soon. I'm like, where are you? He's like, oh, I'm in the arena. Just reach. So I go back to the arena and the arena's closed.
Oh, so yeah. Will, the arena's closed.
So Will opens the side door. We sneak back into the arena.
And I'll lose my media pass after this. It's all good.
And like, and Will's like, yo, just follow behind me or whatever, right? I got a media pass, like, just act nonchalant.
Yeah.
I'm
Vivek Jacob.
I'm dressed in like ball sweats and like this black zip up hoodie, right? And I've got like a basketball backpack on my back, right? Like my ball backpack. Man. So I'm walking, Will's walking, we're both walking through. Security comes by, is like, hey, need to see a media pass. Doesn't say anything to me, just gives me a head nod, lets me keep going, checks Will for his media pass.
Yeah,
I'm like, damn, that is hilarious.
It's all good. It's all good.
I'm all good, man. He must be here for a reason. And then we sat down in.
He probably thought you were on the team, bro, because you were probably in the head to toe Nike zip ups, man. This
So then we go into the E&Y suite, I think it was, like one of the accounting firm suites. Shout out to Alex. Yeah. And then And then we record this podcast that was just pure brilliance. And that was the one where I
You said Raptors in five.
Straight up. I thought they were in five, too.
You said Raptors in five.
They would have, too, if it wasn't for, you know, Kawhi. Like, why could no one shoot that series? But,
yeah, no one could.
Like, if Danny Green could hit a shot in the playoffs, that would have been Raptors in five. But, alas. But that was great because we called Ben Simmons, Michael Carter, Outback Carter Williams.
Yep.
We called I think you just called JJ Redick, JJ Racist. That was straight up. It's fantastic. Had no slander for Jimothy Butler. All respect.
We love
him.
Yeah, we love
them. We had Dreamville Carmelo Anthony, aka Tobias Harris.
We're talking about the ball legend right there.
And then we had No Knees Olajuwon.
That was a great run, man.
That was fantastic. That's my favorite slander pod by far,
man.
When did the slander pod officially come into its own,
man?
Like, was it a Rap Republic?
Oh, it was.
It was a Rap Republic thing.
It was before the it was a Rap Republic episode that we did, right? Because it was a game against the Lakers, and we just smacked the Lakers so bad. So it was
was that when we were all watching it live at Hamdy's? Because
the game together, maybe.
Yes, yeah, way back in the day. Yeah.
That wasn't it. It was a different game. I think it was a game where it was either the game where Serge had 30 or Kyle took that charge on LeBron, where Kyle hit those stupid shots. Yeah. Right. Basically, we eviscerated that team, and completely annihilated them.
Yeah.
And Will's like, "Yo, you want to just reach and talk trash about the Lakers?" I'm like, "Happily."
Yeah.
And that was the birthplace of the slander pot. Then we just did them.
No, it used to be wilder than what it is now, which, you know, it's kind of funny considering, like, it's still pretty bad now. But, like, yeah, man, luckily we haven't actually caught that much blowback, which is always my fear. Like, you know, one time
you guys have the losing streak.
Yeah.
Every time you do a slander, the Raptors lose the next game.
That's also true. Yeah. Which, and also this past season, we had a whole, we did too many slander pods the previous season. So this whole season was a losing streak.
This season was incredible because we had people on Twitter like begging for a slander pod
after anytime.
We beat like OKC. I'm like, they have 12 wins. Like,
a slander pod, man. Chris Boucher just hit a three to clinch the game. And I'm like, okay.
We need a 27
and 45, man. I have to make a rule that, like, it had to be above 500, which only ever happened even once.
No, and we broke that rule because when we beat the Bucks, we were like a game back of 500. And that was the only slander pod.
No, we got to 500.
You got to 500. We got to
500.
Yeah.
And then you guys didn't run it back when they beat the Sixers.
No.
No, we didn't. I was weird, though. We didn't need to do back to back. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it would have been weird.
We didn't have to force it. But no, that was the whole point, man. You know, Assad was like a dessert, I guess, like a real freaky dessert that you would get for certain episodes of the podcast, man.
The great part about the slander pods was, I think after the first one that we did, every time that I'd be on, there was some dude that commented, it's like, oh, man, these guys recording out of their parents' basements with all these ahs and like this, what was it, slang? It was like urban slang or whatever they were using.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, first of all, I am in my parents' basement. And then we started every episode after that. The next three episodes, I started it with like NPR voice.
Yes, the accountant, the accountant voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would ask you for generic accounting advice. Yeah. Which, man. I honestly, like, you know, I think I never had any hesitation with bringing you on. But I anticipated maybe my bosses being like, hey, what is this? Like, we're just suddenly going to do this. But it never happened like that. They always kind of rolled with it, which is, again, like, it's part of what was so cool about the Yahoo experience, was just, like, you know, people willing to take chances. And realistically, like, the chances weren't that big. I think kind of what I, you know, sort of stepping back from, like, looking at the slander pod is, like, in general, is just, like, this is how most fans operate. Like, have you ever opened Twitter.com during a Raptors game? It could be a 30-point lead for the Raptors if someone's like, yo, Fred's 5'4 and shoots layups with his feet. Like, it's you know what I mean? Like, that's just how the conversation is.
And so, I,
like,
think, well, that's your superpower. That's what makes you. Like, you are, I think, to many people in the city, like the guy who covers the team who sounds like them, who makes references that they understand, that appeals to the kind of people that many Raptors fans are. And it's not an accident that by incorporating these things you've been successful. It's by bringing your whole self and being the person you are that's made you my favorite person in the city, and I think a lot of people's favorite person in the city, because you are the kind of person who understands that the best person to tease Chris Middleton after especially gratifying Raptors win if an accountant from Mississauga.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's wild, man.
And what?
No, I'm just gonna chime in here because we're complimenting Will, and that's what I'm here for.
Alex, you know, go do your job, man.
A great thing that you've done, you know, like Assad and Josh were talking about, is just build out this Raptors cinematic universe. You know, like doing the call-in show with Josh, you know, doing the slander pods with Assad, you know, doing the pander pods with me.
Yeah.
No, but I think that's what Josh, I think just kind of echoing what Josh was saying. It's that this is how people talk about the Raptors. This is how people want to talk about basketball. And yeah, that's sure. why people gravitate to your work so much. Versus watching the same talking heads all the time. Like, who do you actually want to go listen to at the end of a Raptors game? And it's Will. I'll mute myself again. See you guys later.
And just to talk on this. The one thing that was special about what Will did was that, like, after a Raptor game, so like in 2016, 2017, after a Raptor game, like if you listen to it on the radio, then you hear like, you know, a Fan 590 like post game or something where it's like a live call in show with fans. But those fans, like, it was a completely different demographic, right?
Yeah.
Versus what Will did in like a digital product was basically create a similar type of show, but engage like the type of commentary that diehard Twitter fans would be like what's actually happened online, right? Because online is where the most diehard fans are, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, these are the people that are literally, you know, spending their lunch break looking at, you know, Delano Banton's summer league stats, you know? Like, just like, oh well, if you look at the trend line here, like,
oh damn.
Well, Kyle Lowry always shoots poorly the first six games of the season. Like, you know, like, these are the type of things, and these were the people that you engaged in a way that there was no engagement for these people before. Like, it was an entire demographic that had nowhere to go post game other than stay on Twitter.
Yeah.
And this show basically created a place where it's like, all right, like, let me get my Twitter takes off. Let me listen to this and just get my laugh off. Just like to wear down the what's the word? Adrenaline.
There's a ton of adrenaline after every game. I think that's probably what sustains everything that I'm trying to do. Cause it's like, objectively speaking, very hard to like instantly pump out 1,200 words out of your brain to send to an editor and then to like actually have it be published in a way that people are going to read, and then have the energy to do a show and then upload it. Like, it's a lot of I guess responsibilities post game, but it's really just like the high of post game. Because honestly, after I do that, like, what I do is I go through Twitter, I check what the conversations were, I go through Reddit, I check what the conversations were, I go through Real GM. I'm really one of these people, man. Like, I'm really about it. So I think, no, I appreciate that. But really, like, you know, you guys are, I think, as I said to Josh, like, this is like, you know, the best part about this whole thing is that, like, I was able to involve so many of y'all. And like, I look at myself like Tom Thibodeau. And you guys are just like the same six players I bring everywhere. So you guys can decide amongst yourself who is Taj Gibson, who is Luol Deng, who is Joakim Noah, who's Nate Robinson, or who else, man? Keith Bogans.
So. Will does run us for a lot of minutes every time.
No, absolutely, bro. These podcasts are never short. Ground. It's like 2 hours every time.
It's 3 a.m.
Yeah, no, bro. The amount of times I've called Assad at 3 a.m. And then afterwards, he's like, all right, I got to go home and do work.
I will say one of my favorite pods that Will did was post-championship. I think it was like 6 a.m. or 3 a.m. in the morning or something, where I think all of us on just to do a random pod. And then I think a couple of days later, then we did like the lunchtime like call-in show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Those two were amazing. Like, because the championship was night, it was like nobody slept this night. It's like 4 a.m., 5 a.m. You know, everybody hop on. Let's just do a pod.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic.
No, you, Alex, and Sahal were the post-championship like Toronto correspondents. Like, I was really looking forward to like hearing what the coverage was like in various parts, you know, get the Milton perspective, get the downtown Toronto perspective, get the Richmond Hill perspective, you know.
And just a shout out Alex, I know he's working on a book, right?
We've already shouted out the book. We don't need
But I just want to say that podcast, because he dropped the link for the championship book that they did.
Oh yeah,
right,
yeah.
After the championship book, but he posted the American link for the purchase first. So I bought it right away. I paid like $20 more than I should have for this book.
because he posted the
American link first. And I just want him to know that he needs to post the Canadian link first. Save your boy a little bit of money. It took longer to ship. I had to pay conversion fees on my credit card.
This guy's paying Taurus.
Just Alex tapping in here. No, Asad, you know, I know the accounting track and what the salaries are like, and I know how many years you've been in the game. So trust me, you can afford some extra shipping. Muting myself once again.
Wow. No, man, this guy didn't work at Sears, so it might be different. Yeah, man. No, I honestly think that, like, but really, like, what I try to do is, like, I do try to, like, hold a mirror, I think, to what the conversation are out there. And, like, you guys are the guys I would talk to all the time. Like, I don't want to expose what's in our DMs. But it's not that substantially different. I mean, some of the things are different. I think
substantially different. Just because we can put it out there now. Like, yeah. Will's 10 things, 7 of them are from our group DM.
Yeah, like around halftime, I'm like, yo, bro, come on, man. I need two more. All I write is just the one, like, adjective at the beginning before the colon. The rest is just...
Yo, Asad, tell me, what am I disgusted by?
Oh, man, Will just pops into the DM. He's like, guys, what was that? It's like, we agree? He's like, okay, read the 10 things. All righty.
Yeah, no, well, you know, honestly, the second half of this past season was tough, man. What did you want me to say? It went when the worst part... I guess I was pretty lucky in this like 2.5 year run, but the lowest part was when there were fewer players than things, which was the whole month of fucking April, man. April and May was fucking 6-7 guys playing. I got to write 2 things on.
I was rewatching like the highlights. I was watching old Malachi highlights and like, one of his like 27 points in the Indiana game, right?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the roster in the Indiana game. I'm like, they legit only had 6 or 7 players on the team available.
Yeah. No, I'm not even kidding. They played. They had Aaron Baines in the corner, and they ran the hammer play for him, bro. A hammer play for Aaron Baines to get a corner 3 because he was the small forward.
It was Baines, Gillespie, and Birch on the court at the same time, and that was the best lineup they could do.
Yeah, the thing, if you're looking at, like, NBA stats and info, there are some Raptors, like, 5-man lineups with 23 minutes. You're like, well, how the hell did this happen? Like,
these guys
all end the game, like, end games together, if at all. And it's like, yeah, you'd have, like, Fred and Paul Watson and Yuta and Stanley. And, like, is this, like, hallucinating this?
No, this past season was quite wild. This is where I gotta like, yeah, really thank fans for people who like actually like listen to follow along this past season because like it was dark.
To some analysis, this is why like when people are like, oh, going into the season, what's it gonna be like without Kyle? What's it gonna be like without Pascal injured? I'm like, man, if I go back and search up the highlights of like most of these games where OG and Fred went off, those guys were playing because most of the season we were down guys constantly. Yeah. So I'm like, guess what? It's gonna be that just with much better depth. I think it'll be okay overall.
Yeah, are you excited about these young guys that you're seeing in summer?
Oh, I'm very excited. I
like this crew, man.
The young guys, like Delano is going to be, I think he's going to do a big 905 run, and he'll probably, you know, he might play some games through the end of the season and see what happens. He might be, like, it depends on what his shot can be, right? But he does some really interesting things, and I think just his height, and if he can move with NBA-level athletes, then I think he'll get some playing time here and there. Yeah. We know the Raptors.
You think the rebounding sticks? He was like top 20 rebounding in the Big Ten.
He's long as hell, man.
I know. That's the thing that makes me really excited. And if he's a guy who can rip down the rebound and start a fast break, like having him and Scotty with that skill set, a guy who can go rip down and make the right pass, I'm delighted.
Could also, he be Sean Livingston? I think that was like the hopeful situation, right? Sean Livingston had that like go-to pull-up mid-range jumper that looked like super broken. But it would go in every time. It was like the flattest jumper from like 20 feet, but it would go in. I think Delano probably does need that because guys are going to go under screens, stuff like that, like really sort of play off of him. But he has length, man. Like even when he gets inside the paint, like if he gets inside the 3-point arc, he can just pick up the ball right there, take 2 steps, and then kind of stretch layup in, which is a rare skill. Which
is Livingston done?
He's
33 or something, right?
He's been done, man.
No, he's
I know. Really I know that he hasn't seen minutes, but why isn't he around the team?
I thought he retired, but yeah, I don't know if he officially retired. But yeah, on the Delano point, like I think he's going to be fine. I think Scotty's going to be fine. I think in terms of rebounding, the Raptors as a group are just going to be better.
Yeah,
because one of the problems with the Raptors is their defense is like there's so much switching. So like your big guys aren't going to be in rebounding position at all times. So it's now when you have like four dudes with length on the court basically at all times, almost, their rebounding should in theory be a lot better. Last season was like,
dog,
they were such a small team last year. Like, it actually hurts to think about. And another point, I know Josh was talking about it earlier, was about the half court offense, not the Raptors, not, you know, immediately focusing on who's the half court like creator or scorer. And I think it's a little overrated. It's not overrated, but I think it's a little bit, people talk about it a little bit too much, because so many teams in the league just do not have a good half court offense, because that's just how good team defenses are now.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Right? Where really your half court offense is going to come down to, do you got to have a guy who can hit a pull up mid range shot by himself, mm-hmm. or is your team going to shoot well from three? Right? Because really it's like, can you get enough advantage creation and then shoot well enough from three for your half court offense to work? And I think what matters more, and we see it in the playoffs, is can you go like 6, 7, 8 deep and still be able to guard, right? Like, if you can put a 5-man unit out there that can guard at those five positions,
mm-hmm.
you can put together the points to end up winning.
Yeah.
Winning a game. And there's teams that are trying it in different ways, but like the Milwaukee Bucks aren't like a necessarily good half court offense.
No.
They get almost everything in transition, and then in half court, they're kind of hoping, can we hit threes well enough?
Yeah, Chris Middleton gotta have a good Chris Middleton game, which is like at least half the time. But like,
yeah. So like, I'm not terribly like, the Raptors half court offense isn't going to be anything special. That's fine, but I don't think it's that like when people talk about half court guys, are you talking about like Trae Young? Like Trae Young, for how many years did that Atlanta team legitimately garbage? Yeah, and now when they get to the playoffs, what was their biggest issue? They're like, we just don't have enough guys. Because you can take one guy away in a playoff series, right? Yeah. But what you need is, like, can you have five guys who are, like, at a base level of offense and are also not, like, targets on defense? And I think the Raptors, at the minimum, can always put out five guys there who can guard, if anything, at plus levels, and can put five guys out there that at least have some sort of offensive threat.
Yeah. You don't, I mean, the Raptors were 16th in offense last year, which is absolutely wild.
Surprising as hell.
Because they were not a good offensive club, and they were 15th in defense. Despite the fact that they were 27th in defensive rebounding rate and 30th in free throws per field goal attempt, which means they were fouling and allowing people to go to the line so much. So, I mean, that just, again, if you listen through this whole past season, one of the common refrains, besides that, you know, Aaron Baines was just really poor, was just like that they didn't have a fifth guy. Like every single game, they only had four guys available. You only have four guys put on the floor, sometimes less than four guys. By the end of the season, they had 0.4 guys available, man, because Malachi was only 40% good. It's like the depth is really intriguing, man. I think Scotty is clearly a guy that's going to be able to pick up right away defensively. It's not even close. He's going to be already a very, very above average defender, even just as a rookie. Precious, I think, is already there as well. Maybe he'll struggle with some post-up players, but to be honest, I don't even think so. And the Raptors double a lot in the post. He's not going to do it one-on-one. Malachi, we already know, is a good defender. Delano, we'll see. I don't think he'll play in the rotation, but you know, he could be. And honestly, if they bring one of these guys in, like Ish or Champagne, if they even factor at all into the rotation, which they probably won't, because I think Utah's still ahead of both those guys. But like, you might get back to the situation you had in 2019-2020. Not a single guy in the rotation was a bad defender. Really, when you got down to it, it was like Matt Thomas and like Terrence Davis at the end of those. But like, those guys weren't playing. Like, every single guy in the rotation was a good defender. And that carries you so far, man.
And my question to people is, like, we went into last season, and before COVID struck, this team was a 4 seed. And what was the roster? You had your core five with Kyle, Norm, OG, Fred, and Pascal. And then who? Your next best player was Chris Boucher.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like, Malachi Flynn at that point was still nobody.
Nah, he's
improved 10 points at that point. Much since then. Like, his end of season improvement to what you're seeing now, like significant improvement in terms of his viability as a player. And then there was nobody. Terrence Davis is not a player. Matt Thomas, I'm sorry, Alex, literally not a player.
Yeah.
Aaron Baines, not even like literally a negative. He was actively handicapping your starting lineup. And then there was nobody. Like, Utah was injured most of it. Like, he would give you some flashes. Now, going into this season, you have Fred, you have Gary Trent Jr., who you can say basically gives you what Norm will give you, like, in terms of role. Like, he doesn't have the same ceiling, but he'll give you the same role as Norm does. OG is going to come back improved. Pascal is likely going to come back improved over what he was last year. And now you have Kem Birch, active plus, who fits with the team, right?
Right.
That's your top five. Now you get to your 6, 7, 8. You've got Chris Boucher. You've got Malachi. You've got I'm blanking here. Like, I don't know if Goran Dragic actually makes the roster, but if he's still on the team at that point, you have Goran Dragic.
Yep.
Then you've got Utah Watanabe, who's actually a player now. You have Scotty Barnes, who, like, legitimately, if you can look at what Scotty Barnes has done just in summer league, that's better than literally anybody on the Raptors bench last year.
Not even close.
By a mile. None of those players would play ahead of him just because of what he can bring, right? Like, Scotty Barnes, you take that over Stanley Johnson. Stanley Johnson started games.
That's
and he was a major, major bench rotation dude. Like, he played big minutes off the bench, and Scotty Barnes, I would actively take Scotty Barnes over Stanley Johnson.
Yeah.
And I haven't even seen him play NBA, like, actual NBA minutes, and I know that for a fact.
That's true.
And then you have Precious Achiuwa, who's, like,
He's been better than I thought he would be,
best player on our bench last year after Chris Boucher. Like, if you put him on last year's team, it would be Boucher, and then you put Achiuwa. That's how bad the depth was on that team.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm really not concerned about this year going into it. I think it's like you can actually have an 8 to 10 man lineup that's going to be fun to play, that'll have competent basketball players.
Yeah. Better rebounding, better at defense. And honestly, with some upside too, man.
I think the offense is going to miss Kyle Lowry a bit more than I think anyone's anticipating. Like, there's just some stuff that, like, when Kyle Lowry, when they run the flex screen with Kyle Lowry and they'd have Mark flash up to meet him, like, stuff like that, it's just gone. And that got things moving there. Like, that made Danny Green a competent regular season player. No disrespect to Pascal or Fred, but I haven't seen those guys make those very easy, like, initiating the offense plays. And I'm sure they can, but that's the stuff that made Kyle Lowry such an elite, like, floor raiser for this team. Yeah. That no matter what, you would have an okay, like, dribble hand off out of the horn set that would get you a decent look with 15 seconds left on the shot clock. And then if stuff went sideways, stuff went sideways.
Yeah. So one point I just want to make on this, and, like, I want to go back and actually pull the numbers and pull the lineups from this, but Pascal's best run in the last 2 years was that time before he had the groin injury in that November, December, early January run. Yeah. And in that time, Kyle and Serge are out. Yeah. And it was just high usage for Fred and Pascal, where Pascal was bringing up the ball. Pascal was getting, like, it wasn't just that Pascal was higher usage, but that he was getting consecutive possessions in a row to use. And Pascal, like, you would see in those games, he would be like, oh, he's like 5 of 16 at halftime. And then he ends the game 12 of 24. Yeah. And it's like, oh, so Pascal, I think, really does thrive as a rhythm dude, where he's like, let me get more and more possessions, where he actually performs better with more possessions than him getting the ball for a couple possessions, than being off the ball while Kyle does stuff, Fred does stuff, OG stuff. I did think that last year and in 2020, and I think the reason the 2020 season we had such a good record was because there were guys injured throughout the season, because you had dudes that were able to play higher usage than they should have. Because when all the guys were together, it just felt like everybody was just slightly handicapping each other, where it's like everyone's playing at 80% of what their capability is. And, like, it's great as a five man to look at, oh, Kyle, Fred, OG, Pascal, Mark, and you have Serge and Norm off the bench. But, like, it felt like too much and not enough to use them with, where now it feels like, okay, now your high usage guys are going to use all their usage and you have actual role players beside them. So I'm pretty excited to see what Pascal will do. I'm also really excited to see OG finally have nobody in front of him to steal his usage, because OG popped off in the second half of last season and he looks amazing. Yeah. And now he's got the twist going. Like, he's ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, that was what was interesting about the second half of the season was the Raptors took their playbook for Norm and gave it to OG.
Yeah.
And it was fun. I mean, it's different. It's a different style. I don't think he can, like, rip it and go on a drive the way Norm could, because Norm was, like, really freaking explosive. That's not overlooked, the fact that Norm was very good. Okay. He was very good for a lot of parts for the Raptors last season. It just didn't really necessarily affect the wins and losses as much. But, like, you know, you gave OG that usage. He looked really good with it. He's coming into his own confidence wise, which is really fun. I mean, but I think one of the more immediate questions in my mind to start the season is just, like, who would you start? Because Pascal's going to be out for the first month. And based on the way I've seen Scotty play, And based on the way I've seen Precious play, I can make a case for either of those two guys. But I think I'll probably want to give Scotty like a 1 month free trial just at the very start of this. Of course, you're probably moving back to the bench when Pascal comes back in. I'm not probably. You'll definitely move back to the bench when Pascal comes back in. But Josh, do you like that idea? Is that exciting you to see Scotty Barnes as you're starting, I guess, three or four to start the season?
It would be exciting, but I can't imagine that Chris doesn't get that look first, especially the opportunity to play him a power forward. Because if Chris is able to hold his own defensively against power forwards in an expanded role, I think that clears up some of the like that roster concern. Like, what do you do with Chris? And it'd be like kind of weird that a guy in a contract year who's been a good soldier for the organization doesn't get that look first, and that you ask a rookie to step into that role. By all means, like I tweeted the other day, it'd be amazing to see Scotty Barnes win Rookie of the Month in the first month of the season and then be asked to go to the bench so Pascal can come back. But I think the chaos isn't worth it. I imagine it's Chris's job to begin with. Because if they don't, that's like a wild thing to
there's,
do to a guy.
There's no, no chance that Chris Boucher isn't starting. Like, he would have to do something wild in camp. He would have to post like a ridiculous IG joke then nobody gets for him to lose it. But no, I think Chris's job to lose, because I know for a fact that he wants to be a starter. He sees himself as a starter. And honestly, he played well enough last year. He produced at such a high level last year. And his biggest flaw was that he's just not a center defensively.
Yeah.
Like his biggest flaw on the floor, I don't think he ever took anything. At no point did I see him as a negative on the offensive end of the floor.
No, never.
Even his worst games, it was like Chris Boucher is legitimately doing stuff out there. That's awesome. And then, like, honestly, like, there's no way that they're going to pass up on the marketing possibilities of doing the Montreal connection, the Twin Towers in Montreal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's definitely happening. And also just on that, like, Kem Birch is your starting center. I don't think you can start Scotty as well and then have, like, two subpar three-point shooters. That doesn't sound like a Nick Nurse thing.
That's fair.
And finally, I just want to say this. Like, we always point to, like, well, you know, Luis Scola was hurt and Pascal started or whatever it was, right? Mm-hmm. Pascal started his first game. It was like OG started as a rookie, like, out the gate. But that was Dwayne Casey, both of those, right?
Yeah.
Nick Nurse has not really shown much of a desire to give much leash to rookies and new players. Like, whether it was, you know, dare I say his name, Terrence Davis. When he was popping off in his first season, Nick was very, very, very,
tight
very
with the minutes. He was tight
with the minutes and very tight with the compliments post game as well. He did not really want to be over complimentary of a rookie at any point.
Yep.
With Malachi, we saw just how slow roll, like how slow they rolled him up.
Yep.
Yeah, you saw Eric Flynn's Facebook feed.
Eric Flynn was snapping, man, watching the first half of the season.
So like Scotty Barnes, I think is gonna. Like, I would expect him to maybe play 10, 15 minutes at most for the first week, 2 weeks of the season.
That's fair.
I would chime in, though, Asad, and say that Nick was still trying to, like, win. Nick was still trying to win. Obviously, like, winning is still a priority. But I feel like maybe they would have huddled up now and said that development is a priority this year. And I'm completely with you. Nick has had this trend, but I feel like it might change. I'm muting myself once again.
If they do something like that, I think they should trade Chris. Like, Chris Boucher is 29 this year. He's in a contract year. He wants to be a starter. You'd be kind of jerking the guy if to start Scotty over him.
And, like, if they would
start Are you trying to fight with Chris again?
No. Look, just because the guy posts, like, you know those email chain, the chain emails you used to get back in the Hotmail days where it's, like, you got to fast forward this to, like, 15 people or else someone will die or something like that? Like, that's essentially what he did on Instagram the other day. But one of the chain emails. No, but I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just, like, a little too hopped up on the Scotty hype, but... Is there a case we made Scotty's already better than Chris Boucher defensively?
Yeah, there is, but that doesn't matter. You can't.
It matters to Nick Nurse. You know Nick loves that defense, man.
But then, like, in my opinion, you should trade Chris in that instance. That is a tough thing to do to a guy.
I think Chris starts for sure because Chris was the starter last year too. Like,
he was a starter. Yeah, it's true.
I don't think Scotty jumps him. Also, I just totally see Scotty as being 100% there. Like there, I think this year they're just 1,000,000% trying to recreate Benchmob 2.0. They got Malachi. Fair. They got a bunch of young athletes to put him beside. They're like, we're going to put the bench out there. It's going to hold its own defensively. Yeah. And then they're just going to transition. Yep. They gave Malachi a pick and roll partner. Finally.
Yep.
Like, good Lord.
Finally. Like, yeah.
Malachi, like Eric Flynn's been saying it, Malachi's the best pick and roll guard in his entire class. He's always been the best pick and roll guard in the nation. Yep. And he's a really good pick and roll player, like just flat out. So, like, I would love to see Malachi now with actual pick and roll targets to hit. Like, if he has Precious Achiuwa as a roll target with Chris Boucher on the opposite wing spacing, and then you have Utah Watanabe slashing or cutting the baseline or spacing, whatever it might be, and then you got Scotty doing whatever Scotty does in the dunker spot, That's a huge lineup, man.
First of all, just think about how big that group
is. Yeah, it's facts.
Yeah, wow.
But that's like really interesting to think about. Yeah, yeah. And I personally super excited to see that. And I think what we're going to see more of is Scotty might play high minutes, but it'll be similar to that 2018 team where it's like the bench mob is just playing 20 minutes because they're.
Yeah, like what's wrong with the idea of having Scotty Barnes in the Rondae Hollis-Jefferson role from a couple of years ago?
It's got to be bigger than that.
A bigger role than what did Rondae play?
Rondae was like the eighth or ninth man. People are going to riot, man. People are already waiting
for riot.
People love Scotty this much. People are calling Patrick McTumbull a bad coach. And I'm like, you don't even know Patrick. I don't know Patrick, man. Don't be slandering Patrick.
What I can see happening, though, is like there are going to be a game early on where it's like Scotty Barnes on the bench unit just went crazy and brought the team back to within 5 points. And Nick just says, all right, we're going to write him out. I think if anyone's minutes are getting taken on the starting lineup, it's going to be either Nick deciding to go small and take Kem off the floor,
right,
or Nick saying, all right, Gary Trent Jr., you're not going to close out the game.
Gary.
It's
Gary. Yeah. It's Gary. Yeah, Rondae played 18 minutes a game.
Okay, that's more than
19 minutes. Again, like, it's one of those things where it's like, we know that season they had all these injuries, so it's like
everyone's
like,
minutes were
Patrick McCaw played 60 minutes a game or something. It's just because you played 36 minutes against the Celtics because you had to start 3 games in a row.
Remember when Pat McCaw was the biggest problem? That was turns out those were the good days. Like, that's not that big of a problem. Like, he was fine, man. Yeah, man. No, I mean, I'm honestly fairly excited about this upcoming season just because we do have this younger group to look forward to, because I think in terms of the emotional psyche, in terms of how to watch games, like, of course, if you win, everything's cool. No one complains about anything after a win. Everything's great. But if you lose and you lose with without that young core to look up on and be eternally positive about, like, that's when losing feels pointless. That's when losing feels meaningless. Like this past season, the number of times I wrote about Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris in the second half of the season, like, I was beside myself. This is why I was in the chat begging for points, because like there was nothing else to talk about, man. I had to cut that down to like five things essentially. So this year we'll have the younger guys. That excites me. And honestly, it's just like the next generation. Cause like, as much as Kyle was amazing, Kyle gave us like all these incredible moments. Like, he couldn't be there forever. Like, at some point he had to move on. I mean, he couldn't have made it more clearer. Like, he literally waved goodbye to the camera, was crying. He sold his house. He gave the reporters 25 minutes. And then, you know, like, that can't be a surprise that he left. But I think that's okay. Like, you have to create another opportunity for guys to step in. And I think it's Fred's team. It's Pascal's team. It's OG's team now. All these other guys, they step up or they don't. It's Scotty's team eventually.
It's also finally Masai's team. Like, it's been Masai's team for a long time.
Brian Colangelo was the true architect.
There's this, like, you know, continuation. The Raptors are truly, and kind of for the first time, being made completely in the image that Masai Ujiri has for an NBA franchise.
Yeah.
And it's cool that he's resigned. It's cool that, yeah, there's no one that, you know, was... I feel like there's no one on the team that wasn't drafted by Masai at this point. Like, it's just going to be a really interesting... Yeah. Not Precious, obviously.
Well, that's true, yeah.
But it's just be interesting to see what Masai and Nick and Bobby and the rest of the Brain Trust have as their vision for what a basketball team looks like and what prospects look like and everything, because there now isn't a guy who carries a ton of gravity that they didn't pick in the organization. It's cool.
And with Kyle, like, people can, like, look back to it, but like the amount of times that he's almost been traded, the amount of times that Like, even in the championship run, he was about to be traded for Mike Conley. Like, it was a close call for a second there.
Sure.
And people were about it. And even the year following, the fan base was like, oh, it's Fred's turn to start. And then Fred had a bad run of a couple games. Like, okay, no, Kyle's good. Kyle's good. Like, people have been ready to push Kyle out the door every single season. Mm-hmm. It's very frustrating. And we're not going to have that this season, which is going to be unfortunate because he's already out the door.
Yeah.
But I will say, this past year, it became very obvious that when Kyle would play, the other guys would just let up a little bit. It was like a clear, like, you could see that they were deferring.
And
whenever Kyle was out, suddenly it would be like, everybody get juiced up. And they're like, all right, take ownership of the project. Right.
They were like 7-0 without Kyle for a stretch there. And that was all before the COVID stuff happened.
Yeah. Because I'm not saying that they're going to be 7-0. Fred and Pascal would just take it on themselves. Like, all right, we got to actually win the game. Like, it wasn't like, okay, these are a couple possessions where Kyle's going to kind of set the pace or whatever. It's like, no, let's take ownership. Let's win this game our way, right? Which is, I think, important. And I think it's going to be important for the team to kind of start molding themselves in a new image, right? Of who your lead guy is. And as much as we're going to miss the Kyle stuff, the only thing I lament about the Kyle stuff is that they made him play all those games without having a big man.
Yeah, like, we just wasted Kyle last year, man. But the amount of assists that Aaron just left on the ground, or Alex Len, like,
complete bullshit. Like, Kyle made Freddie Gillespie look like a player for a couple minutes there.
Yeah, he was setting up Kent Burge as well. Like, all these guys, man. I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, that's part of – it's like – I don't know. It's like the difference between, like, living in university and now living on your own. Like, that like, crucial, like, 1 or 2 years there where, you know, when you lived in university, you lived on campus. Or even if you didn't live on campus, like, you lived, like, near, the school. And, you had some responsibilities. You had to, like, make your own food and stuff like that. But, like, for the most part, you still were in a bit of a cocoon, and then, like, completely the training wheels are off. Like, you're really out in the world. You're trying to, like, make ends meet. You're trying to make rent. You're trying to make, go grocery runs and all this other stuff. Like, that's kind of where the Raptors are now. They've graduated, and this is their time, and no longer have Kyle to lean on. But I think really circling back to the theme of this bigger theme of this podcast is just that you give people opportunities, man. And I think the Raptors giving people opportunities. Wow, Yahoo gave us all opportunities, and I'm trying to force a way to wrap this episode because it's 2 hours in, and I'm very tired, but also very appreciative to all of you guys who came on. So, I think that does it for the show. I feel really happy that I was able to do it with all of you guys. I think you guys were definitely the main people who were on the show with me, and I wanted to thank all of you guys on air for this, but also, just to give you guys that space and the time, because I think that I felt very accomplished and very proud of this show in a way that I don't think a person should rationally feel about a podcast. But I am very thankful. So I'm really happy to have done this last one with you guys. So I appreciate it. In terms of what comes out after this, I will announce, and I will still be involved with the Raptors very heavily. So look out for that. But in the meantime, I wanted to say a huge thank you to Yahoo once again. All of you guys. And for the last time, thanks for listening to Raptors Over Everything.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.